In a viral video, Dr. Senator Rand Paul called on Americans to resist the CDC's anti-science mask mandates. This resulted in him trending on Twitter with like hundreds of thousands of tweets. And of course, it turned into a propaganda war, I suppose, with people saying that he was either pushing misinformation or peddling other, you know, garbage nonsense. And so there is a question around whether or not Rand Paul should be listened to, considering we're looking at the expansion of mask mandates. And more importantly, even NBC has written that vaccine mandates could actually hurt the economy because people are going to choose not to take jobs. There are companies that are doing mask mandates, that are companies doing vaccine mandates, and there's a lot of people saying, you know what, I'm not going to do that, so then they don't get jobs. And then these companies can't hire, and now we have something really fascinating happening. We have 10.1 million job openings. We have more jobs available than people available to work at this point, which they say is supposed to be indicative of some great economic boom, but in fact, we're coming off of a massive economic recession, so this has people quite worried. Companies are trying to hire. Nobody is available to work. We'll see what that leads to. But we're going to have a fun conversation because we are being joined by the editor-in-chief of the Postmillennial, Libby Emmons.
Hello.
Do you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Libby Emmons. I'm the editor-in-chief of the Postmillennial. I'm really glad to be here tonight.
Thanks for having me. And where do you live?
You're going to kill me on this one. I'm ready for it. I live in Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, man.
Oh, no. Mm.
So now if you want to, you know, go to the bodega and get a sandwich, they make you, you got to get like a full physical. And then,
yes, yeah. That's right. You get strip searched. Yeah. Yeah, that's what's going on.
No, but it'll be interesting to talk about your experience in New York and what's going on, especially in light of, you know, what Rand is saying and everything. So
yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. We got Ian.
Doctor, Senator.
I love Dr. Senator.
That's how I'm going to refer to him.
Dr. Senator Rand Paul.
Are they really like not letting people into bodegas without getting vaccines?
Bill de Blasio, the illustrious mayor of New York City, put in place this requirement that you have to show your vaccine card or this Excelsior Pass that Governor Andrew Cuomo created, which has plenty of problems. But the requirement goes into effect, I believe, September 13th. So there's a very limited period of time in which to still enjoy the delights of the Big Apple.
You mean a limited amount of time to escape from New York.
Well, there's that, too. Yeah.
Great movie, by the way.
Who was it who played?
Kurt Russell.
That's right, Kurt Russell.
Snake Plissken, Escape from New York, baby. That's my jam.
Well, you still have about a month and a half, so right? about a month. Good luck.
It can be for my birthday. It'll be my birthday present.
There you go. Clean. We got Libby pushing buttons.
I'm here in the corner pushing buttons. I'm delighted to have Libby, as always. Enjoy her input and really looking forward to hear what she's thinking about what's going on in her city of New York City.
And I'll also add, too, Hollywood stars are fleeing for Austin. So to all of the people we know who are like, you got to go to Austin, I'm like, nope. I said this is going to happen because they're going to bring everyone with them. So I'm certainly, we were looking at Texas. We were like, maybe we should go to Texas. And then I was like, no, I don't want to go to Texas. And I'm glad I didn't. But before we get started, head over to TimCast.com, become a member, and you'll get access to exclusive members-only segments from the TimCast IRL podcast, as well as an advertisement-free experience. You'll be supporting our fierce and independent journalists as well as our new shows. I got the rough cut on the new mystery show, but we're getting ready for the branding and the launch. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. So again, go to TimCast.com, support our work. But don't forget to like this video, subscribe to this channel, share the show with your friends, give us a good podcast review, and share the show if you really like it. Let's read this first story. You may have seen the viral clip. Dr. Senator Rand Paul urges people to defy COVID mandates. They can't arrest all of us. That's a bold statement. Ooh. He says, quote, it's time for us to resist. They can't arrest all of us. They can't keep all of your kids home from school. We don't have to accept the mandates, lockdowns, and harmful policies of the petty tyrants and bureaucrats. We can simply say no, not again. Paul also threatened to hold up every bill with two amendments. If any school system tries to keep kids out of the classroom this fall, one to defund them, and another to allow parents the choice of where their money goes for their child's education. That should be law anyway. We should have school choice. But he says, there's a quote. Children are falling behind in school and are being harmed physically and psychologically by the tactics that you have used to keep them from the classroom during the last year. We won't allow it again. Now, of course, there's already a bunch of people who are claiming that he's telling people to outright defy the CDC in general, which was the funniest thing I saw from that. They were like, Rand Paul says to defy the CDC. And I'm like, he specifically said the restrictions that he called anti-science. I don't think he said the entirety of the CDC. And that distinction is kind of important because the CDC does more than just talk about COVID, mind you. They talk about a lot of things. But, man, what should people do? I don't know. You live in the authoritarian hellscape. What do you think?
I do live in the authoritarian hellscape. And I got to be honest with you. I thought we had a shot. You know, I thought things were not going to quite get this bad. A lot of people in New York City are vaccinated. I think we have some rather high percentage of New Yorkers who are vaccinated. There are people who still don't want to get vaccinated. It's not because they haven't had access to it. So at this point, they are making their grown-up choice to undergo medical treatment or not. For some reason, this is not good enough for the leftist government. De Blasio has always been a disaster. He's been a disaster since the moment he was elected. He is not an intelligent man. He is not a good elected leader. He has absolutely no principles whatsoever. There's nothing worthwhile about him at all. But I did not think that he would literally throw the entire city under the bus just in order to, you know, satisfy this weird idea that he has where everybody needs to just do what he says. So, yeah, so there's this idea, this vaccine passport. Cuomo created an Excel, they actually call it the Excelsior Pass. You can download it on your phone. It will track your COVID test results. It will track your COVID vaccine. You can show it. And additionally, part of the idea with the Excelsior Pass is that if you show it to get into a sporting event or what have you, you also have to show, supposedly, your ID. This is what it says on the New York State website, so that they can prove that it's actually your pass. So now, in order to move about freely in the city where you live, you have to show your papers at various places.
ID.
Yeah, that's what it says on the website. Right. I don't know. I haven't used it. I won't, obviously. I'm never going to download something so the government can track me on my phone. I mean, we're probably already tracked, whatever, but I'm not going to voluntarily do that.
Well, this is interesting because it enters the public sphere as like, oh, but it's about you got your vaccine already. What's the big deal? Right. And you need your ID.
And then you need your ID. And then what's next?
That's racist.
Right? What's next? It's also racist, of course.
Well,
as
it's
we
racist
know.
For two reasons. Asking for ID is racist.
Oh, yeah.
Democrats said so.
Voting. Yeah.
And it is true in New York and especially many of the places, the black community is the least likely to be vaccinated among racial demographics.
Yeah. So that was something I was thinking about, too, because, you know, de Blasio has paid lip service to the black community for a long time. Even last year when we had all of the BLM protests and then you had the, I forget what they were called, but they were like the COVID tracker people, right? The like test and trace.
Yeah, I don't remember.
So New York had this like whole test and trace corps. And if you tested positive for COVID, I don't know if they still do, but they would call you.
I remember
and
that.
Track you down. And de Blasio and Cuomo, one of the things that they agreed on during the pandemic was that you are not allowed to ask someone if they have been to a protest when you are doing a track and trace thing for COVID.
Everything's a protest from now on.
So you're allowed to protest without having, and so then they said like, you know, then all these reports came out that said BLM protests weren't super spreader events. You literally weren't allowed to ask people if they'd been to a protest.
Yeah.
Once they were tracked with COVID, you weren't allowed to ask them. So there's actually no way of knowing whether or not they were super spreader events or not.
I have a question for you. What percentage of residents of New York City do you think are vaccinated?
I think it's something like 60.
It is 55.6.
There you go.
So close. Yeah. That's half.
It's a plenty of an amount.
I think we're going to see more exodus from New York City.
I think so, too. There were already like 400,000 really rich families that left during the pandemic. The New York City school system started out in 2020 with 1.1 million public school students, a nice, healthy number, robust school system. And I think we're in like the 800,000s area now.
Whoa. Is this the U.S. just being crushed, like on purpose?
You being what?
Crushed.
Is the U.S. being crushed on purpose?
Yeah.
Like by some other authoritarian type of situation?
Well, maybe not necessarily on purpose might go too far, but the policies being put in place are just destroying the country.
I think they are destroying the country. I think we have a real ethos problem. We've heard Joe Biden say over and over again that his job is to keep Americans safe. The president's job is not to keep Americans safe. The president's job is to, you know, run the country the way that his constituents say. And
commander in chief of the armed forces.
To technically do that and keep the country safe, perhaps, but not individuals. And it's not his job to do anything other than to protect our rights. And that's not what's going on. Our rights are not being protected when we're being treated as though we can't make decisions about our own medical care.
Yeah, it feels like everything being put into place, and I probably said this 50 million times by now, is just literally destroying the economy. Mm. And you have to ask, if we're doing the same thing we did last time and it didn't work last time, mm-hmm. why are we doing the same thing again? Like, they're putting in policies that, according to NBC News, are going to hurt mm-hmm. job recitation
right.
growth. And they're putting into place policies that will basically just drive people out of New York. And we did hear Bill de Blasio say he wanted to convert the abandoned buildings into public housing.
Right.
So maybe insofar as it goes with, like, de Blasio, on purpose isn't that far.
I think he does want to completely destroy the city. I don't think he has any vision at all or any understanding of what it is that New York is really about. The other issue, too, is a matter of enforcement. So we've seen, I think we were looking at videos earlier, in France, yeah. you see police mm-hmm. going around to the restaurants yeah. being like, oh, let me see your documentation that permits you to be outside of your home. Make sure you've – what are you going to do in New York? Are the police going to be asked to do this?
Yes.
Because here's an issue with that. First of all, if the police aren't asked to do it, now you're asking just your basic guy at the bodega to start demanding things of patrons. I don't know about you guys. I get really testy when people ask me for stuff that they're not entitled to about my person, right? Mm-hmm. I was telling you guys earlier about an incident in Philadelphia that we don't need to get into. but if it's not your just basic McDonald's employee who gets to demand these things of you, your basic middle manager who then drunk on power is going to freak out at you and start calling you names, if the New York City Police Department is asked to do this, will they do it? You think they will do it?
Oh, absolutely.
I was talking to some guys at the NYPD that I met at some Black Trans Rights Lives Matter protests over the summer that were actually rather amusing. And I was talking to a guy who said that the NYPD, in fact, declined to enforce social distancing mandates. What happened was, it was early on, it was like May 2020, and they were being asked to enforce social distancing. They were going out into the communities where there was the most COVID, most active COVID. So what were these communities? These were mostly minority communities. So they're wandering around like Fort Greene or whatever, you know, like Crown Heights, wandering around like Bed-Stuy, looking for Black people and Latino people on their stoop having barbecues
right.
and then telling them to go inside. So the guys I was talking to in the force, they were like, that was a really super bad look that we were like breaking up. You know, here we are. We're told to be less enforcing of things in these communities. We had done stop and frisk, whatever else. They pulled back on that, and now they're supposed to tell them to all go inside. So they refused. They declined to enforce that. They declined to enforce the mask thing. If you go around, if you're on the New York City subway system, and you happen to spot a police officer, which is not super frequent these days, but if you happen to spot them, they're not wearing masks. Hmm. Lots of other people are wearing masks. The NYPD declined to enforce this stuff. In fact, I don't know if you guys remember, there was a bar in Staten Island
yeah.
that
yeah.
was like very vocally opposed. So it was the state police that were enforcing right. that stuff because that's who Cuomo had control over.
Well, then the state police are going to come in and do it.
Do you think that
oh, yeah.
the state police would end up with this?
This is the normal thing they do. They bring in outside cops because, you know, if you're a cop in New York, mm-hmm. you're worried that if the NYPD steps on toes of the locals, then you're not going to be able to go to restaurants. You're not going to be able – like, you're right. going to get people throwing stuff at you. So it happened in with Attila's Gym.
Mm-hmm. That's right. In New Jersey.
The local cops from that town showed up and said, have a nice day, everybody, and left.
Right.
So they brought in outside cops who came in and said, screw you, with a smile on their face and put the boot down, you know?
Yeah, I wonder how that would go down. Hopefully nobody ever has to find out.
What a disaster. What a total nightmare.
They did it with the bar. They shut it down.
It was a bar in Staten Island. And yeah. the guy was, he wasn't even selling anything. He was like, eh, it's just, I'll give it away for free, I guess. And then mm-hmm. the state police came and stood in front of the building. I think they arrested the guy, right?
Yeah, they arrested him multiple times. And there was literally a bar like a block and a half away that was allowed to operate. And right. he wasn't. That,
because
yeah.
they did like zones.
They did these stupid zones.
Yeah, there was a woman.
As though these zones are impossible. My son tells me about this. You know, we'll go into a restaurant and then you don't have to take it before. And And he'd be like, oh, well, that's right. Once we sit down, we can take our masks off because chairs are COVID blockers.
It's true.
Yeah. He's 11. Yeah. He's 11 and he sees through this mess, yes. You know?
This is the craziest thing. I love there's a meme where it's like someone pulls up to a drive-thru and they're being handed there's a tray holding the Wendy's bag. And then the person's like, what's this? And they're like, it's your food. He's like, why is it on a tray? And they're like, for COVID. It's like, why can't you just hand me the bag? Because we're trying to reduce contact. It's like, so you mean to tell me that you literally handled the meat, handled the bread, handled the lettuce, you put it all in the wrapper, put it all in the bag, you've touched it all already, and now you've put on a tray that you won't touch, so you're not touching the bag the one last time.
Right.
If anything, you've increased the amount of contact you've made by holding the tray. Mm-hmm. Just give me the food.
Early on at the post-millennial, we were running a lot of stories like that because they were just so hysterical. And there was one with like a guy at Tim Hortons pushing out a coffee on a hockey stick, like balanced on a hockey stick.
That's really funny.
Oh, yeah. Man.
I was you know, that's not helping.
That's why I'm saying we are chickens in a chicken coop. Some of the chickens are like, hey, something's not right.
When you guys were earlier talking about state police coming in, it made me think of the Shays Rebellion. Are you familiar with this rebellion? Right after the Confederate, basically after the United States did the, 13 colonies?
Yeah.
What was it called? The
13 colonies.
Yeah, it was before they did the Declaration of Independence. They had like an original document that they were using.
Articles of Confederation.
Confederation. Yeah, and the states had too much control, and their own police wouldn't enforce, like, the Farmers' Rebellion wanted the courts shut down. The police were like, no, let them. These are our friends. We're not going to stop them. So they had to call in the state police. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, it's too dangerous to give so much power locally. We need to federalize. And in a way, they're right, because they were able to organize taxes and military. But, you know, the danger of that is now you can send in the feds.
Everything's broken and breaking. And I love it when, we pulled up the polls last week. You probably won't be surprised by this, Libby. The majority of Democrat voters believe the economy is fairly good.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of independent and Republican voters think the economy is either very bad or fairly bad.
Yeah.
What about what's happening has these Democrats being like, this is fine.
But they're not paying any attention.
There you go.
You know, they're just not looking at it. These are the people who are in their homes. They've barely left. These are the double maskers, you know, who watch Rachel Maddow.
Yeah, that's true.
And are probably still scrubbing their groceries, for goodness sake. It's insane. The real issue too, I mean, there's so many real issues, but what happens when it doesn't work, you know, when people still don't get vaccinated?
Wait. Whatever we did the past year,
it didn't work.
Cases are surging.
That's
again.
That's what I'm saying.
There there's talks about lockdowns. Maybe we won't lock down, but we got to wear masks again.
And it's not going to work. It's still not going to work. So how much are we going to give away? And my favorite argument, too, is the people who are like, you know, we've given up our rights in the past. So what are you complaining about now? It's really not that big a deal. And it's like, well, maybe we should have not given our rights in the past as well. Maybe we should not have capitulated to these authoritarian ideologies.
Well,
previously,
I got out of the cities.
You did get out of the cities.
You didn't.
I didn't.
Nope.
I did not.
So this is interesting, though, because there's two things I want to hit at. First, we briefly mentioned a little bit of the New York stuff, but what I've been saying for the past couple of months is that it's like you're in a house, mm-hmm. and the garage starts on fire, and you're like, I'm in the living room, who cares? And I'm like, okay. But the other issue is, more importantly, you could argue, if I'm sitting in my living room and the garage catches fire, I can go put the fire out. The problem is you've got other people in your house holding you back,
right.
Saying there's no fire, stop. And that's the New York voter base.
That should be a meme. That should be that dog meme. You know, the dog meme.
He's trying to put the fire out.
This is fine. That should be part of it. Yeah, I love New York City. I've always loved New York City. I always wanted to live there my whole life. My great grandparents came from Italy to New York City when like in 1911 or something like that. My grandparents were born in Little Italy. My mom was born in Brooklyn. I was born in Jersey because my parents were in law school there. Mm-hmm. My son was born in Brooklyn. I love New York City. New York City is like, these kinds of restrictions and rules will make New York City not what it is. When I go out recently, right, so Washington Square Park's downtown, and we've written about this also at Postmillennial, there's been like a lot of police crackdowns at Washington Square Park. I was down there one night.
Over what?
You know, they just don't like the kids. They don't want the kids having fun is the way I see it. I talked to some residents, some people who live in Greenwich Village, which used to be like a super artsy neighborhood and is now basically just NYU's campus. And so it's like a lot of rich professors. in their NYU housing or whatever, and they don't like having people in the park past midnight. So the cops come down, they close the park after midnight, they try and kick everybody out. And when you walk through Washington Square Park these days at night, it's kind of great. It's kind of like it was in the 90s, right? Like there's a lot of kids making out, making a mess, getting high, like screwing around, you know, like it reminds me of my misspent youth, which I like. And then the cops come in and shut it down. But that kind of New York, and also in the East Side, on the Lower East Side, people are always out, they're unmasking, they're all, you know, they're like having a good time. None of that can last with these kind of restrictions. None of that can continue. The arts scene can't continue with that. And arts culture also has been so incredibly co-opted by authoritarianism at this point. You know, it's propaganda. They just like do exactly what they're told. They create the kind of work that they're told. Yeah.
That's the people in New York and how they vote. I mean, it's
yes,
just...
Yes, it is.
I'm continually impressed by the cognitive dissonance of the TV says X one day and then Y the next day, but they're both consistent. I just love these memes that are going around where it's like these blue check people tweeting things like, you know, during Trump, why would anyone trust the federal government? And then there's one guy and he's literally saying, give me the booster every single day and into my veins.
Now they love it. Now they love the federal government. It's insane. So, yeah, so...
So they're voting.
Yeah.
How do you save us? This is the thing. Like, a lot of people are like, don't leave the cities, Tim. Stay and fight. And I'm like, dude, New York's like 20% conservative. And I'm not even saying conservatives have all the like have the right answer. It's just the only alternative. And there's nothing.
There's nothing. And there aren't any options. Right. I mean, I'm a registered Democrat in New York so that I can vote in the primary because who cares about the mayoral primary on the Republican ticket? It just doesn't matter. Eric Adams was on the ticket, and it was actually fascinating to see that Eric Adams won that primary. He was he's Democratic Party machine. So yes, he's far leftist, et cetera, but he was the most conservative one on the ticket. And people were shocked that minorities voted for Eric Adams instead of Maya Wiley, who was like, you know, oh, progressive. And we're like eating rainbow puke and all of that stuff.
But this is just losing.
It's losing. So, yeah. Do I want to leave cities? No, I love cities. You are partially right, though. but I did fall in love with Dallas recently, which was amazing. I was down there covering CPAC with Postmillennial, and I kind of loved loved Dallas. So a couple of things. One, it was really non-judgmental. So
a lot of guns.
I didn't see a lot of guns, but maybe that's part of it. Maybe that just keeps everyone polite.
What are they saying? Armed society is a polite society.
You know? But the people I met were very non-judgmental, very just like open and like, hey, what's up? I would say like, people would say like, oh, you know, what are you doing here? And I'd be like, I'm here for work. Nobody asked me what I did for a living. No one cared. I respect that. I've spent my entire life in the Northeast where who your family is matters, where you went to school matters, what your job is matters. Like all of these little things matter. And the only thing that doesn't really matter is who you are personally and individually. You know, all that matters is like the trappings of who you are. Mm-hmm. And in Dallas, it wasn't like that. There was this great neighborhood called Deep Ellum where I went out drinking pretty much every night, which that was fun. But another thing that I liked too, was that it was a big city, but it didn't have these same, it didn't feel like it had these same kind of constraints.
Oh, I mean, Texas is open, isn't it?
Yeah, Texas is pretty open. I was in Houston last week, which was different than Dallas.
What was the difference?
Houston is a little more, it felt like a little more glam, I think. It's also not as walkable. Dallas was a very walkable city, which I liked. Like, I could walk to all of the places I wanted to go. Another thing I liked, too, though, just, you know, and maybe it's just because I spent my whole life in the Northeast, and it's changing so quickly into something that, where I don't feel comfortable, where I don't feel like I can be part of life there. Like when I was in Texas, I've never spent like any time in the South ever in my life. Like I've been to Florida. When I was 8, I think we went to the beach in the Carolinas. You know,
oh, yeah, but Ocean Isles, nice.
I don't know. Like there's a picture of me in a bathing suit. Like I don't really know what's going on. I remember the condo was cold. That's it. So I've never spent any time in the South, and then it was amazing to have absolutely no point of reference. Like there were no memories anywhere. there were no, in New York, everywhere I go, like every street I walk down, every corner, you know, it's like, oh, I remember that. I remember that. I was recently walking with friends and I realized that we kept passing theaters where I'd had work performed and, you know, I don't do theater anymore. But I was like, every time I was like, oh, crushing, a little crushing, a little crushing. Nothing like that in Dallas, which also is open and free and comfortable and people are non-judgy and, you know, maybe I can, I don't know, maybe I can make a new life. So, I'm really interested in moving the post-millennial to a southern state. So we've been kind of talking about that. I hear Tennessee is great.
Tennessee.
Got to visit Tennessee.
I would say, yeah, Tennessee or Kentucky or mm-hmm. West Virginia.
So I'm open. But what's sort of what I keep marveling at is that I've never been open to leaving the Northeast in my entire life, like ever. And now I'm just like, oh my God, put me in my car and drive south.
But look who's being driven out. So you mentioned, you know, a lot of people who left New York were like wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
It was like upper class.
Sure.
Lower upper class. It's, mm-hmm. you know, not necessarily people who are millionaires, but
they were able to keep their apartments.
The people who moved?
No, the millionaires.
Oh, right, exactly.
They just went to their other house.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The ultra-rich were like, I'm going to go stay in Martha's Vineyard for a little while.
Like Obama, they party with him this
weekend. Exactly. But a lot of people were like, we're moving. Mm-hmm. And they had the ability to move very quickly. So they're well off, but not necessarily the ultra-rich or anything like that. They're leaving. But you're not ultra-rich or anything, and now you're leaving.
Nope.
Yeah, so they're driving away you. They're homogenizing mm-hmm. the city. The only people who are going to stay are going to be diehard authoritarians who are just like, whatever de Blasio says, I will do no matter what. And they do.
Or the really poor.
The people who can't leave. Who will now live under the boot.
Uninformed.
Yeah.
People are uninformed.
Yeah. And the New York City public school system, which I watched decades of rebuilding. And so that, like, you know, my friends who have money, who could afford private school, were sending their kids to public schools. I sent my child to a public school after his private school closed. I can't afford the private schools in New York City. It's like $45,000 a year, ridiculousness. Plus, they're trash. I mean, that's the other piece, is they are trash. At the end of the school year this year, a couple of my son's teachers, I want to say, came out to me as conservative.
Oh, wow.
And they were like, we really like what you've been doing.
There's too many people who do that. Sorry. No, you know what?
And they should just speak up. Now, they're in teachers' unions. They were handing me Maya Wiley flyers or whatever it was. Wow. And they were like, we have to hand you this. And I was like, I'm not voting for,
you know, I've had
Maya Wiley.
I've had Antifa people do that to me. Mm-hmm. When I was in Portland, I had Black Bloc masked Antifa walk to me and be like, dude, we love your stuff. And then I was like,
what are they doing?
They're
serving the machine.
Yes, serving the machine. There are people who, well, to be fair, there's probably the people who are talking to me were like, I like that you try to at least, you know, give the information, but we still don't like those guys. So they can say, oh, you're cool, you're all right. But they're still zealots. Mm-hmm. And it's still a problem. But when we have tons of people, I can't tell you how many emails we get where it's like, I really wish I could say something, but I can't. I'm like, dude, then we're screwed.
Okay? We're screwed. I agree with you. I get those emails, too, from people who, you know, were in theater and that I've worked with. And they're like, oh, I'm still trying to hang on to my theater career. And I'm like, cash it in, dude. Chuck it. Start over. Let's do something else.
And everyone always responds, it's easy to say, you know, when you don't have kids, because these people have kids. Mm-hmm. You've got a job that you can move with that actually your cultural positions benefit your career. A lot of people don't have that. And I'm still saying, dude, look, I get it. I don't have kids. But I can tell you this, I'm worried about the future for the next generation because people won't speak up and defend their kids.
That's right.
If you're not going to defend your children and the world they live in, then you're giving them trash. So as for leaving New York, I will say, mm-hmm. I say get out of the cities. And a lot of people are like, Tim, but what about Texas and what about Florida? I'm like, good point. Miami's pretty cool. The weather is brutal.
The weather seems bad.
The weather is like, it's like you might as well go live under the sea. It's like humid and raining all the time. But DeSantis is doing a pretty good job with the state. They're coming out and saying like, oh, the COVID and all this crazy stuff. And I'm like, at this point, if people have the opportunity to get the vaccines and they don't want to do it, I don't know what a country is supposed to do if you, like, you know, I guess de Blasio forced people to do it. But I digress. Here's the problem right here. From the New York Post, Hollywood stars are fleeing to Austin amid the COVID-19 pandemic, and I warned y'all this would happen. When there's that comic of Joe Rogan and he's got his little pull bag, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, his roller bag, yeah. and he's walking from California to Texas, and the bag says liberal policies on it.
Should have been a fanny pack, by the way.
And there's, it says liberal policies on it, and there's a cowboy saying, like, hey, hold on there, mister, why don't you leave that where you got it? Everyone's like, yeah, but is Joe Rogan really going to be bringing these policies with him? He may be fairly, like, lefty in a lot of ways, but he's very anti-authoritarian. And he has staff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he is going to run a business. Like, with you know, he's got his comedy aspirations. He wants to have shows. He started a club. There yeah. you go. Got to hire people. So what's going to happen? The people from the industry in California are going to be like, well, Joe Rogan's hiring. I guess I'll go out there. And those are rational people. They're not far lefties, but they're a little lefty. They'll probably still vote Democrat. And then the rest of the Hollywood stars are going to be like, did you hear that Elon Musk and all of these really fun and amazing people are moving to Austin. I should go there too. And I've got a bunch of Hollywood celebrities being like, Austin's the place to be. And guess what? They're going to bring all their staff.
And they're going to bring all their lefty politics
with them. That's right. Because the person who makes $50,000 a year carrying the coattails of some Hollywood celebrity is not going to be conservative. They're going to be like, to those according to their needs or whatever. That's mm-hmm. what they're going to be advocating for. So they're all going to come, mm-hmm. and Texas is going to go.
Well, maybe. I definitely think so.
Well,
if that's the case, so the New Yorkers are fleeing to Florida. We've seen that. Californians are fleeing to Texas. That's happening. So where the hell are we supposed to go?
West Virginia.
Tennessee,
Kentucky. I almost said Texas again. I mean Tennessee, Kentucky, uh-huh. West Virginia.
I know Louisville has some interesting stuff going
Where's
on.
Where's that?
Louisville.
Yeah, Louisville.
Kentucky. Louisville?
See, I don't even know. Yeah, I don't even know. I don't even know.
Ian was like, what's that?
What is that? Yeah, I don't know.
Who's
good point.
That?
Good point. I don't even know. Louisville, actually, that's in Colorado. So maybe. Yeah. Let me just pretend I got that mixed up.
Nashville, I hear, is doing pretty good.
Right?
You know?
Yeah.
You've got
Daily Wires.
Daily Wires
there.
Out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, see, everybody.
I definitely want to visit.
It was so reactive for everybody to be like, Texas. And I'm like, that's like a trope about Texas being this like free and very red state. It's like it was almost 50-50 this past couple of elections, and Austin is deep blue and it's attracting all of the hipsters. It's been since South by Southwest, as far as I can remember.
Right, that's
very
true.
Hipster.
Well, Austin has been for a long time. What about like maybe Eastern Montana?
Oh, no. Montana and Wyoming, 100%.
Oh yeah, Wyoming.
You want to go live in the middle of nowhere and rough it and figure it out for yourself.
You could do that.
I think Bozeman might be a little blue, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying Eastern Montana.
Yeah. I've driven through there. It's awesome.
It's beautiful. Nothing. You can't even get cell service.
We didn't want to move to a place where we're going to get the influx of the progressive faux activist. I don't even think it's fair to call the Hollywood stars leftists. That's unfair to leftists. It is. Like, if I can sit here and have a conversation with an actual communist who believes in communism and genuinely believes in communism, I can respect them actually standing up and being honest. These Hollywood, even though I disagree with them, the Hollywood stars, they don't believe in anything.
They're just saying,
so we're looking at places
they're opportunists.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They're like, whatever the corporations want me to say, so they pay me
their
money.
They're models, mm-hmm. glorified models.
Yeah.
It's marketing. They're literally marketing tools for movies and for shows. So, of course, they're going to side with corporate America and say whatever they think will sell more.
Doesn't mean that they don't know stuff. Some of them are probably incredibly educated
on things. Well, sure, so James Woods.
Yeah, yep. you get the...
He's a little mean, though.
You know, your job is to keep your mouth shut, though. So if they do know what's going on, they will get ostracized if they speak up.
Like James Woods.
Like it happened to me, basically. I stopped getting called back when they stopped my YouTube videos. 2007. Mm-hmm. That was rough.
Look, we were trying to find a place where we can get away from the cities, have space, and, you know, expand. And we were in the Philly area, and it was nuts. It was one of the worst states for restrictions. And they told us, like, in March, don't go outside anymore. Unless you have no choice. They were like, don't walk around with people. And we were like, this is crazy.
It's insane.
But we look at Texas, and I'm like, I can see what's going to happen in Texas. I can see what's going to happen with these Hollywood, California, Arizona, Colorado. They're all going to keep coming in. And then there you go. You end up with hipster blue state. Now, West Virginia is losing people. People are – because there's this phenomenon. It's really fascinating. Even in red states, urban centers tend to be blue for some reason. So even in West Virginia, you have – blue areas. Mm-hmm. The people who are there, there's an article I was reading in the AP, and this woman was like, I'm a teacher and this is horrible. The state is terrible. I'm leaving. I'm going to Texas. And I was like, yes, get out of here. West Virginia, man. you've got a lot of opportunity. We were looking at some small dying towns. Mm-hmm. I was like, wouldn't it be cool if we went to an area that used to be bustling with life and it's got buildings and infrastructure, but now it's an opportunity zone because the industry left? We could save money. We could have available resources and internet. Found a bunch of towns just like that. The problem, no good airports. So bringing people in would be impossible. So then we find this area, basically, which is the compromise, where we're close enough to an airport, but kind of far away. But this facility is still in Maryland, so it kind of sucks. But
there is that. I mean, I love this idea of, like, revitalizing a dead town. There's a there was an entire town in Connecticut, I think I saw, like, a year or so ago. The entire town was for sale.
Wow.
Megan McCain talks about this.
Well,
I don't want to live in Connecticut. But Megan McCain talks about this on Instagram a lot. She's like, you know, let's create a new place to live. We'll just all go move there. And there's something to that idea of, like, just everybody just go to some town and turn it into a place where you want to be.
Like, all this solar panels on every roof. You don't need a central electric grid.
Well, whatever. That'd be awesome. You know, that could be your town.
Well,
you know?
So we're planning this.
You could have different towns.
Yeah, so we're near each other. Yeah.
We have a train.
We have this.
Totally, we could get, like, some light rail going.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
You think we're joking?
I'm not joking. No, I'm not joking.
I
need a place to live. So let's build one.
No. We've been planning it for the past couple of weeks.
Nice.
So we need a bigger production facility. This place we're in right now can host a few of the shows we're doing. But we've got so much happening and so many people that we're like, okay, we need another building. We need another space because we don't have the offices for this place. I love how the media is like, Tim Pool bought an 8-bedroom mansion. It's like, yeah, we rent out half of it for production. And the other half is basically a green room, essentially, where people are, like, working.
Plus, why can't you have whatever you want? Like, well, have your big house if you want.
Well, sure. But what I mean is they try to make it seem like the purpose of the house is we're all just like, we have a theater room and a game room and a bowling room. And it's like, well, we have an office, an office, an office, an office, an office, a studio. So we need another building so we can actually alleviate some of that pressure.
And so that you can have the bowling room and the game room.
Yes.
Actually, I mean, we do have a skate park here.
Two lanes.
Which is awesome. Right. Yeah, I mean,
but,
to be fair.
So here's the plan. I was looking for these places in West Virginia where we would just start building something. Because it's actually surprisingly not that expensive if you're building just like a standard, like, office unit kind of building. Mm-hmm. And we went to – I forgot where we were going. I don't remember where we were going, the mall or something. And we took the scenic route, and we drove through a bunch of these small towns in West Virginia that were just nothing. Like, they're just little houses. And then I was like, a lot of these places are for sale for cheap. They need to work to fix them up. But why bother – trying to build this massive unit and get utilities installed and all that stuff when we could literally buy like three of these houses for the same price and then have twice as much space as we normally would. We wouldn't have the acreage, but we'd have a decent amount of acreage. Mm-hmm. And then we actually just have a little urban hub, suburban hub, where we have like that building. Oh yeah, that's where they do video editing. That building is where they do the game design. And so then you have a little town instead of a building.
Right.
I think that'd be epic.
That sounds really badass.
Sounds way better than going to Austin with a bunch of Hollywood celebrities who are just like vomiting up faux activism.
And who have absolutely no principles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's and then you're in West Virginia, which is the second reddest state in the country.
Okay.
You know what the funny thing is, though?
I'll come. Like, I'm in.
All right. Bring your friends.
We'll bring the post-millennial to the new town. We'll be like the resident newspaper.
Great, yeah.
This is the funniest thing, though. Check it out. I've long maintained this, even going back to the days of like Ron Paul, because I don't completely agree with Ron Paul's conservative positions in a lot of ways, but I do agree with his libertarian positions of like, leave me alone. I'm like, I like that. See, the issue is, if you're a true left libertarian, you're better off voting for and supporting right libertarians, real ones. The problem with like the Libertarian Party is they're all kind of like out of their mind, except for now you've got, you know, Dave Smith and the Mises Caucus guys who are pretty savvy and on the level. But here's the thing. There's no situation by which you can vote in the modern system, left libertarians, and actually get a cooperative system that you want. But if you have in a Ron Paul style government of limited government, then you and your friends can be free to get together and do what you want to do without being oppressed by outside forces.
Which really should be, you know, that's Americanism. That's like what that is. It's an individualistic perspective. What we have on the left these days is so much, but it's about, you know, these principles that they tout, these principles of compassion and whatever else, but there's literally nothing that they wouldn't sacrifice for this mythological conception of the greater good.
We were talking about this with Vosh. I think this was on the bonus segment, because I didn't talk as much on the bonus segment. We argued a little bit more. And I think Charlie had brought this up. Charlie Kirk brought this up, and then I agreed that basically there's no real good way to scale left libertarianism, because the idea of libertarian socialism eventually becomes authoritarian, because there's no way to enforce. Once the lines of communication go 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, then you're forcing people to do things they don't want to do. It's an impossible thing to scale.
All governments probably become authoritarian, right?
Well, right libertarianism to a certain extent, maybe not. And I don't mean far right, like laissez-faire capitalism. I mean like leaning more towards free enterprise with light regulation, like very light. Then you'll end up with people choosing where they want to live, buying what they want to buy. It's negotiated. It's trade.
But you got corporate authoritarianism in that direction.
That's why I said light regulation. So you have the means by which the people can still cooperate to stop the centralization of power. And so here's what I'm saying. If there is a left libertarian system, how does it expand to actually encompass and guarantee your rights in a large space where you're hundreds of miles away from somebody else?
You need like isolated pockets of it that can co-interoperate.
But so the issue then is there's not – so if you had a government that was left libertarian, that is encompassing the entire state. You then have people in the northwest part of the state saying, I don't agree with what the southeast is imposing on us, and now you are getting into authoritarianism. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily that it is authoritarian. It's that people are not going to start fighting, and it's hard to have a cohesive system. If the system itself is right libertarian, then you can be like us here up in the northwest. We operate on a left libertarian principle of libertarian socialism. If you want to move here, here are the rules. If you're not, that's fine. You can go and do your own thing. And then everyone agrees, and they all work together, and they can share their vegetables without using money. And then the right libertarian people is the overarching system where it says, we're going to leave you all alone. Unless there's the non-aggression principle, and unless you've got the currency and the negotiating skills, you can't come in and screw with these people. Then on your own little hippie farm, you can do whatever you want. That, I think, works out pretty great.
Maybe.
Yeah, except that it's a very similar type of thing, right? Because you still then have a sort of group ideology that rules everything, and individuals are not permitted to go against that group ideology.
But like in a small farm?
I don't know.
Like if I own a farm,
like a commune
type
of thing. I mean, if it's your farm, right?
Exactly.
And it's like your actual farm, then I wouldn't move there if I didn't want to go along with your thing.
And there
you go. But like, then we're also, you know, cults do that too. Like, did you guys see that Netflix documentary about that little town in Oregon that was taken over by this weird cult? It was like,
no. Wow.
Weird, like, public sex cult thing. It was very,
interesting.
Weird.
It was weird.
I'm saying there's one very famous commune.
But they pushed out all of the people who lived there originally. So the people who lived there originally had this sort of, they were just like doing whatever, you know, they were mostly older folks, retired. There was like a little cafe or whatever. So these cult people moved in. They all started wearing the exact same outfits all the time. And they basically ran for city government, and they pushed out the people who were there. And they took over the town.
Right. That's when you get into authoritarianism. That's
right.
Why I'm saying left libertarianism doesn't scale. It eventually just becomes authoritarian. So the true ideal of left libertarianism would be like a farm with like a bunch of hippies hanging out, and they're friends with each other, and they're a family or whatever.
I guess a little utopian.
There's a very famous one that's got 100 person capacity, and people apply. And then they say, here are the rules. And then they come in and they stay as long as they want. And when they're done, they leave. And then it opens up a position for someone else.
Somebody else can come in. Yeah.
So it's capped at 100. And everyone knows the rules and everyone agrees. And they, you know, arbitrate disputes between people. But for the most part, it is a cooperative. And the people with seniority are the ones who basically say, like, okay, if you're new here, we're going to protect the people who are here. But people rotate.
Interesting.
You get bigger than that and you start swallowing up other people's jurisdictions, and then it just becomes authoritarianism.
Why can't we have a city that respects people's individual liberties and doesn't capitulate to authoritarianism? Like maybe a nice big city with some.
Because people don't want to work. that's probably it. So I think
I'm so happy to work. I'm so grateful to have a job all the time. I'm like, too. Yay!
Yeah.
I have a job.
But look at what we're look at what we're seeing now with the current trends in business, the labor shortage. I saw somebody post a meme, and they were like, it was two stands, like, you know, kiosks, and one had a huge line of people and the other didn't. And the huge line of people said $17 an hour, and the other kiosk said minimum wage. And then they commented like, maybe if these businesses paid better wages, people would want to work there. And I say, that's not true. The problem isn't that they're not paying enough. It's that the government's paying them for nothing.
Well, that's what the president said. The president basically told, there was like one of those stupid town hall things on CNN, and a business owner was like, hey, I can't get anyone to come work at my restaurant. And Biden was basically like, maybe you should pay more.
So
the guy's like, oh yeah, I should pay more with like restrictions and, you know. How is he supposed to make any money if he can't get anyone to work there?
So it's obvious. if you're paying someone $16 an hour not to work, that means they can literally sit there staring at the wall or play video games. Mm-hmm. If someone comes and says $17 an hour to work 40 hours, you'd be like, you're paying me $1 an hour.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
Because zero has now become $16 an hour.
Right.
The interesting thing about this is that people will accept the $300 bonus check until $300 is literally worth nothing. Because mm-hmm. think about it. Let's say right now the government's like, okay, $300 per week is a bonus. And you're thinking, okay, $300, that can buy me enough groceries for about a week. Inflation hits because they're mass printing of money without any resources being produced. So within a couple of weeks or a month, now they're like, okay, $300 can get me about 65% of the way through the week in terms of groceries. I'll take it. It's free, right? That carries on until eventually you're like, $300. It's a free cheeseburger.
Right.
I'll take a free cheeseburger.
Right.
No matter what happens, it's free something. No matter how much or how little it is a free something. So until $300 becomes worth zero, people will never give up free money. Granted, a free cheeseburger, you'll still have to get a job then. But then we're still driving hyperinflation.
Depends on how big the cheeseburger is. But yeah, I mean, I think also part of the devaluing of work and devaluing the work ethic is part of our culture that devalues life. We devalue the individual. We say, you know, you're not worth anything unless you're famous. You're not worth anything unless you're rich or any of these other things. You know, be driven by your pleasure principles. Don't be driven by interest and responsibility and, you know, stewarding families or any of this. You know, we're the message that we get is to, like, it's idiocracy, right? It's Mike Judge's idiocracy. It's like, sit around, jerk off, eat cheeseburgers, and don't care about yourself. Don't care about other human beings. Don't care about your own worth.
If aliens ever come to Earth, they will shake hands with humans not because they overcame nuclear weapons, but because we overcame the Xbox. That's a I can't remember what that quote is from. It's a little bit old because Xbox is
are a little bit old. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean everyone plays PlayStation, right? That's the real issue. No. Anyway, the point is, video
Microsoft,
games.
Are you shilling for Microsoft right now?
No, I'm mocking them for being less popular.
Xbox.
Video games trigger, dopamine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's replaced our actual goals and drives and desires. We are addicted to not doing we're not doing substantive things anymore.
I've been feeling nihilistic lately, and it's partly, I think, and I'm kind of trying to locate why. What I've come to is I keep wanting to solve the world's problems in this lifetime. I feel like I can, and I'm going – if I don't, then I've failed. And it's driving me insane because it's such a big – problem and groupthink and herd mentality. And I realize, or at least I'm thinking, maybe we're just planting the seeds of the trees we'll never see.
Yeah. Well, of course, it's a long game. It's a long project. But also, doesn't the project have a lot to do with how we interact with each other on a personal level, how we go about our daily lives? Being kind to each other is so meaningful. I don't think that can be overestimated. I sound dumb and Pollyanna-ish, and I've been accused of Pollyannaism before.
What's that?
Pollyannism, where you're just like hopelessly optimistic despite
being hit with
meteors all the time.
It's a dog sitting in a burning building. Yeah. And this is fun.
But I do think that what really matters in life are the kind moments that we have with one another.
We're going to jump into this guy right here, Philip DeFranco.
Oh.
We're going to talk about Philip DeFranco.
Okay.
I used to be a big fan of Phil DeFranco. He was his own guy. He started on YouTube a long time ago, one of the OGs, and he built up this news company. He had SourceFed, and I was always like, man, this guy, he works hard. He was calm, rational, reasonable. He interviewed Gary Johnson. He brought alternative voices to the political debate, and I was like, this is cool. It is cool to see that through YouTube, we can hear more from people like, the Libertarian Party. Granted, the Libertarian Party, little Jack Sparrow-y. But today, I just see these tweets from him, and it's like, he's just become so mean.
He was always kind of snarky like that.
Yeah. But it's one thing, I don't know, man. Maybe I'm just wrong, but I've met him a couple times, I've talked with him, and he always seemed to be willing to listen and kind of more reasonable.
Yeah.
Like, when the media ecosystem was on TV yelling and things like that, he always presented the news in a way that was more so like, well, let's take a look at what they're saying and why. Like, let's be reasonable. Here's what he has now. Philip DeFranco tweeted, imagine having the eligibility and access to get the vaccine and saying, nah. Also, to the pearl clutchers offended by this tweet, yes, I am calling you stupid, and you can go F yourself, you ignorant, selfish F face. He then posted again, F man, damn it, this isn't me. I missed the mark. I would really like to apologize if you'll give me the time to read this. I saw that tweet when he said that, and I was like, that's cool, man. That's like Phil. And then I read what he actually posted. Just kidding, ha ha ha, F you again. And the people saying, oh wow, name calling is really going to convince me. I'm done trying to convince you. That's over. I'm just going to mock you for believing a bunch of F-face grifters monetizing misinformation and or ignorance over scientists using the most recent and relevant info. So look, I'm not going to cry about it. It's like whatever. I don't know. You know, he does his thing. That's fine. But I saw that and I'm like, what happened to us? What? He wasn't always like that.
No. He was sexy Phil, dude. If you know Phil in the early days, his video channel was sexy Phil.
Straight edge.
S-X-E
Which
Phil.
Is straight edge Phil.
Yeah, pure Phil being sexy in his bedroom, all black and white, chilling. Mystery Guitar Man writes his killer theme song. It's Phil. He's a normal dude.
But even 6 years ago, like the last time I saw him at VidCon or whatever, and he was like, hey, you know, he's really nice, really calm, really chill. Now he's on Twitter just calling people F-face and insulting them.
I was thinking this about Sarah Silverman, too. It seems like, and I don't know if it's indicative of celebrities only, but it seems like people that are kind of tertiarily or on the outskirts watching what's happening have like a snapping mental break moment, and then it comes out in some dumb Twitter post. Remember when Sarah Silverman was
but look,
get over it, people. Like, she just had it. And this is Phil just having it.
Yes, but he also was on the wrong side of the Covington kids thing. It's been a gradual thing where...
Oh, Phil?
Yeah, the dude's like, look, man, I'm not going to cry that he's calling people these things. I'm just asking, like, why is that happening?
Probably because he doesn't have anyone around telling him he's an idiot. I mean, his wife's pretty cool.
But you look at what happens when these things happen, right? Now, there'll be some drama. They'll be like, oh, you know, Tim Pool said X or whatever. All I'm saying is, why do you got to be so mean to people all the time? Why is everyone constantly trying to be mean? I don't want to be mean to Phil. I was a big fan until I started seeing him tweet stuff like this, and I'm just like, I don't like people being just mean directly to other people.
He's got kids. I think he has two kids now. So he's being like overly protective of it and bought into the hype. The media
and I also want to say this
too.
That's
still not an excuse to be like a total dick, though.
Also, but I also did say, what happened to us? I'm not absolving myself from any of the responsibility for the things
I've said
either. I've said
some horrible stuff to people in the last 20 years.
And I'm just wondering, like, man, can we just kind of... Look, I'm not going to be unfair to myself. I genuinely try to avoid directly insulting and name-calling. I do a very good job. But sometimes I'll mock people and I'll, like, you know, I'll do, like, you know, really snide impersonations of them. But I generally try to avoid things like this that are just really nasty, really low, really angry and mean. No forgiveness. That's like the key thing here. Like, what happened to being like, yo, let's work this out. Let's be nice to each other.
But one thing that is going on too, and we can go back to discussing this vaccine passport situation, is that is bullying, right? Saying to people, you can't go to work, you can't work out, you can't eat out, you can't participate in life unless you do this thing that I'm demanding that you do, whatever it is. Whatever it is, that's bullying thing to do. That's a mean bully thing to do.
And so I understand
from the same people who are constantly saying, like, "Oh, don't bully. We have to have special sessions in all of our schools." And
so here's
not to be bullies.
Here's what I want to point out: when he says, "I'm going to mock you for believing a bunch of F-face grifters monetizing misinformation and/or ignorance over scientists using the most recent and relevant info," you know what the nail in the coffin for me on this one is one of the biggest issues from UPMC, University of Pittsburgh, and Carnegie Mellon University. Researchers identify groups hesitant about COVID-19 vaccine, and they say hesitancy held constant in the most educated group, those with a PhD. By May, PhDs were the most hesitant group, while vaccine hesitancy decreased across virtually all racial groups. They say blacks and Pacific Islanders had the largest decrease. They mention that those with high school educations or less were the most likely to reduce their vaccine hesitancy. So here's my overall point about what Phil is doing. Not only is he being really, really mean to people, but he is also very, very wrong about what he's talking about. The people who are being misled or, you know, whatever, are not more like... First of all, why would you be mean to somebody who is confused by lies?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, when people believe bad things, I don't say, you're a stupid moron. I say, that's not true. Let me show you the proof. Mm-hmm. So why come out and insult them? And it turns out, of all the people he's criticizing people with PhDs. Now, I can't tell you why people with PhDs are the most hesitant. I have no idea. So the point is, are we going to pretend like people with PhDs are stupid? Okay, well, isn't that the science and academia? We have a very serious conundrum of perspectives here. This is science. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to trust science, right? Mm. Okay. Well, Carnegie Mellon University and University of Pittsburgh are saying PhDs are the most hesitant group. They're also academics, and I want to know why they feel that way. I'm not going to scream at them, insult them, and deride them. And I'm not trying to be mad at Phil either. I'm just hoping people kind of chill out and we can have real conversations again. You know what we did with Charlie Kirk and Vosh? I thought was incredible. And there's a photo of all of us. We're all just standing together and everything. And I'm like, look at that, man. You know, they come here, they meet, they laugh, they made points. They don't agree with each other at all. Mm-hmm. But at least we can have something where we can sit down and be cordial. Twitter is a nightmare. We should just, you know what? I'm for one regulation right now. Ban Twitter. Just go ahead. Get
it's
rid of
text.
It.
Text. Communicating in text. That's where all this dumb miscommunication seems to be stemming
but
from.
But where's the anger coming from, dude?
From, like the Twitter lack of emotional interaction. Like, when it's all text, when right. I etch something on a wall and then you walk in and look at the wall, we're not having that emotional connection. And so I can see where the anger,
I write tweets all the time.
Dumb thing. Mm-hmm.
I'll write a tweet and then I'll delete it.
Yeah, I did that today.
I do it like 7 times a day. I'm like, here's how I feel, and I don't need to share that.
Yeah,
I do that too. I kind of should have done that the other day.
Why? What did you tweet?
I tweeted about how New York City's vaccine passports are a total disaster, and I'm definitely going to leave New York. People are like, oh, let me have your apartment. And I'm like, girl, the joke's on you. You don't want my apartment.
Yeah, that was Dana Schwartz.
It was a couple
journalist.
Of people.
So there was...
but no, it doesn't get good light, and it's not in a neighborhood you want to live
in. What neighborhood?
I'm not going to say where I live.
You posted a tweet saying the vaccine passports were wrong, and then it actually made it to the front page of Reddit, r/all.
Oh,
the funniest thing about it was the comments were all calling you an anti-vaxxer.
Right.
And it's like, you're vaccinated.
Yeah,
I'm vaccinated.
But that's the thing.
Yeah.
This is the tribalism.
The point is that that's my choice. Nobody should have to show their medical status in order to move freely
and
about
their
society.
ID?
It's insanity.
And their ID. Show your
nothing.
Papers.
Nothing.
We should
have a right to live anonymously in our cities, for God's sake.
Well, it's not only that. It's that how many times have we heard showing your papers was the wrong thing, that we should never have the authority demanding papers from people going about their business?
But you have to watch saying anything about that, too. I mean, you have Marjorie Taylor Greene comparing, you know, vaccine passports and mandates and things like that to Third Reich things, and she gets totally slammed for it. So, I mean, you can't – there's also this thing where you can't make comparisons to historical realities.
This is
whether it's
the
right
perfect
or,
example.
Whether it's right or wrong.
This is the perfect example of tribalism.
It.
The fact that when they see your post saying, like, we shouldn't mandate this stuff, the response is anti-vaxxers are so dumb, even though you are vaccinated.
Right.
It shows that they don't care about reality. It's the other. You know what I just watched the other day? Have you guys seen Electric Dreams?
No.
It's on Amazon. It's a Philip K. Dick shorts or whatever.
Dude,
you guys got to watch the final episode. I think it's episode 10. Might be episode 8. I don't know. It is about this guy, and it's like in the near future, I guess. And there's one candidate left in the race, and so you vote to affirm the president. And then this she's a female candidate, and she's being interviewed, and she abruptly says, "Kill all others,"
and then
changes the subject to education real quickly. And then the interviewer is like, "I can't believe you would say something like that about education." And then this guy's like, "Wait, what? She just said, kill all others. Why isn't anybody talking about this?" And he gets his wife, and she's like, "What are you talking about? I don't care." He goes to work, and he's telling all his friends. And they're like, "Man, who cares about politics?"
Right.
Then a few days later, there's a billboard that says, "Kill all others." And there's a person hanging from a noose. And then they're like, "Oh, it's just politics, man. It's a gimmick. It's a dummy." And so this guy keeps coming out and saying, like, "Why are you doing this? Why are you advocating for this?" And the people go, "What are you? An other? Why are you defending them? He's an other." And that's how you identify yourself. It was a brilliant episode. And the gist of it is basically the authority makes a declaration. Mm-hmm. If you oppose them, you are the person they're talking
about.
You're
the problem.
And that's what's happening now. If the government says, we're going to do something abusive and authoritarian, and you say, I don't think you should do that, they say, then you're the Nazi,
you're
fascist, you're the anti-vaxxer.
You're the problem.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's risky when you're dealing with totalitarian regimes, because if you come out against them, you'll get murdered. But if you create an alternate path, that often can work.
It is extremely creepy to me what's happening with everything, about how you quite literally have people who last year were anti-vaxxers, and we all called them anti-vaxxers.
Right.
Hilarious.
Right.
Now,
like those people who wouldn't get their kids vaccinated against the measles, and so we had a measles outbreak in California.
I'm talking about last year when they were all of these blue checks were ragging on FDA and the CDC and the big pharma.
You mean like when Kamala Harris was like, I wouldn't trust a Trump vaccine?
And Cuomo. And then all these other personalities.
Can I tell you something? So we wrote about that, the Kamala Harris vaccine thing. We wrote about it at the time. Kamala Harris is opposed to the Trump vaccine, you know, or whatever it was, some headline. And then recently we wrote about it again. We were like, let's just remind people that she said she wouldn't trust a vaccine, you know, from the, we were fact checked for that. And it was like, this is what she said. The article was, this is the thing she said.
Right.
Do you guys remember this is the thing she said? That's all it was. It was like, it was like a blip. It was like 200 words. It was nothing. It was like a, I think it was it? Science Feedback, maybe? It might have been Science Feedback.
Did you?
But also the thing, do you remember in the spring, Dr. Senator Rand Paul was talking to Fauci, and they did like two segments. There was like a March segment and then a little later and similar questions. So we wrote a story about like, this is what he said in March. This was their conversation in March. This was their conversation in May. We got fact checked for that for not enough context. We literally wrote down the things the senator said to the doctor. We wrote those things down.
Did you see that Facebook?
That was missing context. It was literally the conversation.
Facebook labeled the CDC fake news?
No.
There was a CDC article saying that they were recommending a change in the PCR test to like a better test. And then because of a fact checker, I guess what people were saying was like, aha, this means the test didn't work. And then the fact checker responded to that link saying, that's not true. It did work. It's just a change in methodology. But it automatically applied the fake news tag to all of the posts, that post from the CDC.
That is amazing. Because social media knows better. They know what the narrative is. And anything that diverts from the narrative is false.
Well, I hope you're ready for this one. We're in for a wild ride. NBC News says mandating vaccines amid a worker shortage could spell trouble for corporate America. It's so hard to find workers now that if you know a certain percentage of your workers are going to quit due to a vaccine mandate, you're not going to disrupt that, said one HR expert. So we're in a labor shortage. We've got 10.1 million job openings, and we don't even have that many people available for work. They've said now the ratio of jobs to people is 0.9, down from 1. It used to be like for every one job, we had people who weren't looking for work. Now we have more jobs. I guess you could say it's a good thing. It means like people are like, hey, we're open for business. We need employees. But it's actually a really bad thing.
Yeah,
it means the economy won't be able to recover.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the people. Nobody will work. And now that they're doing mask mandates and vaccine mandates at a lot of these businesses, people are going to quit. It's going to get worse.
And also, I wouldn't want to go to work and be dehumanized and dehumanize the people around me. I wouldn't want to do that either, especially, you know, when I could buy a $300 cheeseburger.
That's right. If inflation gets to those levels, then you can have your $300 cheeseburger.
Yeah.
You know what I really love? I made a point where I said, when we had John Schnatter on the show, Papa John, he mentioned in the member segment that he knows a pizzeria where they're paying $35 an hour for people to make pizzas, which is unheard
insane.
Of.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, so enjoy your $50 pizza. And then I get all these people being like, Tim, in Sweden, cheeseburgers are still only $5 and they have a little... Sweden is like one of the largest weapons exporters per capita. Don't come to me and talk to me about what's sustaining their economy, okay? I'm not saying that quite literally overnight your pizza is going to cost $50 because they're paying $35 an hour right now. What I'm saying is, sure, at a store with massive volume where they're doing hundreds of cheeseburgers per hour, they can accommodate higher salaries and wages, and they should. Absolutely.
Sure.
McDonald's and Burger King, all these places, they should pay more. They have massive profits. Same is true for Walmart. But when it comes to a small mom-and-pop pizzeria, if you got to pay someone $35 an hour, how many pizzas are you making per hour? That's a 50% increase in labor costs. Yes, your pizza's going to go from $12 to $14. And then people are like, it's only $2. Who cares? I'm willing to pay that. If it means that people are going to have better salaries, right, and better wages.
Health insurance.
I mean, sure. People deserve health insurance. I think the bigger problem is that health insurance shouldn't come from employers.
Right.
We need to find a solution to that. That makes no sense. But the issue ultimately is that it ripples throughout the entire economy. It's not about the one pizza costing $14 for you right now. It's that the guy who can't feed his family because it's too expensive now asks his boss for a raise, and it goes up across the board.
Yeah, it does. Well, that's inflation. That's the problem with it. Yeah.
Well, so this is these mandates. What people don't realize is that people are going to leave cities.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to quit their jobs. It's going to make the economies worse in all of our big cities. Maybe.
Yeah, no, it is going to make. I mean, I'm not going to go anywhere that requires me to show paperwork in order to enter. I specifically absolutely will not. I'm going to make it impossible for me to do that. I'm going to, like, destroy my vaccine card so that I can't.
You know, people, I can't people even have already in, lost theirs.
You know?
There's something
they ought to. Like, let's all lose them. There was a video in Italy. They're burning their right. their passes.
Vosh,
as well they should.
Vosh said this on the show, and I thought it was a really good point because I hadn't considered it. He said, the problem with vaccine mandates for, like, New York, for instance, that a lot of people already lost their cards.
Yeah.
It was too big. It didn't fit in your wallet. They didn't know what to do with it.
Plus,
and they
nobody cares.
Lost it.
Like, I got vaccinated, and that's done now.
The other thing, too, is they kept saying they weren't going to do it. Mm-hmm. So people were like, oh, okay, I guess I don't need this.
Well, the federal government promised. They said it over and over again. I mean, you had Jen Psaki in the briefing room being asked this question over and over. Are there going to be federal vaccine passports? And no, we're not going to have a vaccine credential. We're not going to do that. Absolutely will not. We will work with businesses who intend to do that and make sure that they do that in the appropriate way. There will not be a federal credential. Even if there's not a federal credential, there should be a disallowance of any yeah. sort of credential that mandates that. That should just not even be allowed.
What was that meme? I think who mentioned it? It was like a whole lot of people who, what was it? Oh man, I'm forgetting it. I just forgot it. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Okay.
It was like a whole bunch of people who were like anti-fascists are now show me your papers.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Something like that.
Quick switch from.
Yeah. 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 Last year.
Yeah.
It was like oppose the dictator. Now it's show me your papers. Mm-hmm. Isn't that funny how that works?
The interesting thing too with Trump is when you ask people what were some of his authoritarian fascist policies, they can't actually name any. It was just resist the individual that you really, really think is over the top and obnoxious.
Did you see Ben Shapiro on Bill Maher?
Yeah.
So one of the things that Bill Maher said when he mentions Ben Shapiro's
book.
And I
talked to him last week. I did an interview with Ben Shapiro. With Ben? It was interesting, right.
He has the Authoritarian Moment, his new book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Bill Maher is like, I thought you were going to talk about Trump. And I'm like, please tell me, Trump, what?
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about war and foreign policy because that's what every president's been doing. And I'll agree with you there for sure. But Trump did a whole lot of nothing in a lot of ways.
Yes, that's correct.
He didn't shut down the riots. He wagged his finger and said, oh, the radical left, and then didn't do anything.
That's a really good impression.
No, whatever. So they call him an authoritarian, and I'm like, for what? Why?
Yeah, there's nothing to back it up. It's just a word that this is used for someone you don't like. It's the other. It's that other thing.
I guess the idea, the one thing I could say is the people who are willing to believe, like, just follow Trump no matter what Trump said. But that wasn't the majority of conservatives. Conservatives, like the Republicans, the people who voted for Trump were more than willing to criticize him, as evidenced by the fact that you actually have this weird independent voters and Republicans are leaning in the same direction right now.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, independents, people who probably vote Libertarian and third party, aren't Republicans, but they all recognize the economy is not good. But for some reason, the Democrats, you want to know what authoritarian is? Authoritarian is when the economy is in flames. Nobody's working, massive job openings. We've got warnings from our mainstream media saying this is going to get worse because of the mandates. And the Democrats being like, I think the economy is going great.
You know,
fairly good.
I get confused when we say the Democrats. Do you mean the politicians or the people that are registered?
Specifically, I'm referring to a poll which says Democratic voters believe
voters,
the economy
voters.
Is doing good.
So they're not Democrats. Like
they are.
Only the people, only the politicians are considered Democrats.
No.
The voters are just people. They're not Democrats or Republicans.
So the way the polling works, it asks you which party you're affiliated with.
That's,
and say
that's
they are
confusing
Democrats.
Because when you say the Democratic Party is full of idiots, mm-hmm. I think of Congress. And that, in a lot of ways, I agree with you. But the people that register as Democrats, I don't want to put them in that ballpark.
That's it, but they are.
They're the ones who are doing this voting.
I've registered Democrat for like 20 years.
I'm
a registered Democrat.
Yeah, you're not a Democrat,
Ian.
Though. You're registered to vote for
Ian,
that party.
Right. Is the economy doing good?
No, it's terrible.
Why is it then that independent voters and Republicans recognize that, but Democratic voters think the economy is doing good?
Because they watch MSNBC, and I think Libby pointed
that
out earlier.
What it means when they say
Rachel Maddow.
They identify as Democrats. They all believe the same thing. Whatever the authority tells them, they follow. That's authoritarianism.
The lemming mindset.
Mm-hmm.
That's authoritarianism. Strict adherence to what the authority tells you. It's like Michael Brzezinski said. It's her job to tell you what to think, remember?
It's the narrative. I mean, it's that's what everybody is fighting over. In media, too, that's what everyone is fighting over. It's like there's like two stories that are being told, and the media is arguing over which story is the accurate story. And people aren't wanting to just put out facts and say, this is the thing that happened. This is the thing that this person said.
I don't think the media is doing that. I think
You don't think so? You don't think that the media is, like, intentionally skewing towards a specific narrative?
They are, but what you said was something more specific. What I'm saying is they're not trying – what the media is doing is they're saying whatever at the time will benefit them politically. That's all they're doing.
They're opportunistic.
Not, they're not talking about making anyone here to – yes. And the problem – the authoritarianism comes from the people who are like, oh, Rachel Maddow said the other day that she doesn't trust vaccines, but today she says she does. So I guess I will too. That's authoritarianism. Rachel Maddow said so. Don Lemon said so. Mm-hmm. Let's just do whatever they say. Meanwhile, you have regular people who are like, dude, like I vote Republican for the first time. You know, Donald Trump. I voted for Obama before him
in 2020. Yeah, the
I don't want to vote for. I wouldn't vote for Trump again, probably.
You would not vote for
No, I think DeSantis is the better choice. But to be completely honest, I'd rather have a Dave Smith. Mm-hmm. Although I recognize the Libertarian Party's weakness in terms of the two-party system of this country. We'll see how things play out. I really, really despise the idea of voting against the Democrats or voting against the Republicans.
Yeah.
But I think DeSantis has done fairly well.
I think he's a pretty interesting guy.
Yeah. So we'll see.
I think he has actual ideas, which unusual.
If Trump comes on here and talks about fusion, then I will fully support him. But
really?
If he keeps doing 20th century technology, I got nothing. Uh-huh.
I think Trump has shown us that, look, he may have been the Molotov cocktail in the machine. He may have been the bull in the China shop. We got to oil that man.
Yeah, you like that ringing.
That ringing. But he made so many mistakes.
Yeah.
He should have fired a ton more people. Yeah. But I think a lot of people saw Trump as just an opportunity for something outside the establishment.
That's disturbing because that leads to authoritarianism.
It doesn't.
The authoritarian crackback is against that authoritarian mindset of like, I love this guy. He's going to just break it.
I don't know about that. I mean,
they're just blindly following him. And so now we're getting into a revolt against it.
I don't think it was blind following of Trump, right? And I was opposed to Trump in 2016. I definitely was not in favor. You know, I went to the Women's March, whatever, stupid. But but I think that what you had at the time when Trump was elected were, you know, half of the population did not see their views or their values reflected in any aspect of American culture or political life. Not in arts, academia, entertainment, anywhere, not in media. So when Trump came along and was like, hey, 75 million people who don't see your values or views reflected anywhere in the country, in literally anything you're capable of subscribing to, I'm over here, I can listen to you, I can give voice to you, right? Like, that's sort of what he was about. He was like a figure that was able to do that. So when he was taken away, right, those people are back to having absolutely no voice, only now they're thoroughly publicly vilified as opposed to just being vilified, which they were previously.
And Ian, you were describing more so anarchy than authoritarianism. If someone says, I will not adhere to the authority structure and I will put in place someone who is chaotic and destructive to that system, that is anti-authoritarian. Yeah. A lot of people, as Michael Moore explained, were looking at the human Molotov cocktail, the biggest F you to the machine. They hated the authority. They hate the establishment. So they didn't support Trump. Some people were zealots for Trump. No joke. Mm-hmm. That whatever Trump would say, they'd be like, yes. And they believe crazy things. But that's a smaller element. Most people were just like, we need something as a wedge in the door. Something that's going to get us off this broken path. Now, for me, I didn't vote for Trump in 2016. I was like, I don't care about either of these people. And then in 2020, Trump put out his agenda with like school choice on it, the opposition to critical race applied principles, things like that. He said he was actively working to get our troops out of Afghanistan. And I was like, that right there, right? Get the troops home, end this stuff. Okay, I'll vote for that. Plus, Joe Biden's insane, right? That's a terrible idea. Moving forward, that was very much like a rock in a hard place when we were looking at with 2020. It's getting bad now. And so I think DeSantis is great. He's like Trump in a lot of ways, but he's not a bombast. You know what I mean? So, of course, the media will go after him and try to vilify him, but he's more tactful. He's half the age of Trump.
He doesn't appear to be a narcissist either, which I respect.
I don't agree with a lot of his positions, and so I'm not saying I would vote for the guy. I'm just saying I probably would not support Trump considering we've learned our lessons and we have an opportunity for, you know, someone else. That being said, I've never been a big fan of the two-party system. Like I said, I didn't vote in 2012 or 2016, and 2020 was only because it was – just a crazy time, to be completely honest. And now I'm like, it may get crazier. It probably will. We're in the lull year where there's no elections.
Right.
So things are calm. Views and ratings are a little low. Everyone's kind of chilling out. midterms next year. It's going to be insane.
What do you think? Do you think the GOP have a chance to
definitely
take the House?
I think they will take it.
You think so?
There's a long way to
go.
There's
a lot of people running. It's really fascinating to like see all of these. What's the new term? America First people running. I'm interested to see what they have to say for themselves.
This is what I'm saying. I think people have learned a lot of lessons. Mm-hmm. And that means that come 2024, I don't think Trump will be as necessary as people think he was last year or even right now. I think we're already seeing early signs that you've got a DeSantis, mm-hmm. perhaps. Again, I'm not a conservative. I don't completely agree. I'd be more inclined to vote Libertarian, and that's only because of Dave Smith. Otherwise, I don't even know who I'd vote for.
Yeah, I need some like technology talk from Dave. Otherwise, I can't get on with like the whole break it down concept. Like I've been listening to him lately a little bit, but he's been like, "Yeah, we need to undo this and undo that." And like, okay, give me, what are we going to do? What's next?
And I think here's the difference.
Like technology board or something. I'm down, Dave. Let's do this.
And absolutely. And that's I think the what's inspiring about Dave is that he's a guy you can talk to. He's not out of reach and out of touch, and more interested in, you know, the consultants, what they're going to say, what size shoe or color tie or anything like that. That's one of the problems we have with the two-party system, is it's just machine regimented. And Trump kind of broke that in a lot of ways. But back to what you were saying about mm-hmm. all these midterm people yeah. running, people are learning the lessons. A lot of America First types, a lot of populist types
right.
are now running, and there's a huge opportunity. I think what we saw in 2020, the overperformance in the in Congress of right. the Republicans, it's going to be even crazier. Because look, this is what happened with Trump in 2016. They take everything. Trump's voters came out for Trump and the Republicans. But in 2018, Trump's voters did not turn out. This is true. I went through the data years ago.
In 2018?
In 2018,
really?
Trump's voters were less.
Okay.
And so that
meant for like the midterms.
Yes.
Right.
So what happened was in 2016, when Trump's voters came out, they voted down ticket Republican. Mm-hmm. But because those people did not come out in 2018, to a certain degree was lost, Republicans ended up losing a lot of seats because
of that.
That's
when we got like AOC and all those guys, right?
That's right. Yeah. And I think 31 seats flipped from Republican to Democrat, because without Trump's name on the ticket, the Trump voters, so many Trump voters were first time voters or independent voters. Mm-hmm. Now we're moving into 2022. I think a lot of people have learned lessons. And Joe Biden was the we'll take whatever we can get to stop Trump.
Right.
Now they've lost that. They have lost the name Trump as well. So how many regular people are going to come out in 2022 all dancing and cheering, saying, end the orange man,
back the party that's been doing, by that point, will have been doing such a poor job of handling this whole COVID situation. And that's interesting, too, when you watch the poll numbers dropping, the worse COVID gets and the less control over it the White House can maintain, the more Biden's ratings are going to tank. People are going to want him gone. He staked his whole presidency on solving several crises. And that's why you see, you know, you saw so much with COVID, but that's why they're trying to pivot so hard to climate. They right. really want to get to climate so that they can tackle the next crisis and be heroes again.
When you look at the disdain people had for Trump, and they did, I know a lot of people don't want to believe it, but Trump did increase his voter base by a large number. Mm-hmm. He had more votes than any sitting president in history, but Biden got more. And I hear from people who like, they don't believe it. And I'm like, dude.
What, the like, I told election this, fraud people?
Yeah, I told this to Steve Bannon. I know people who are as dumb as a box of rocks, mm-hmm. who have no business in politics and couldn't tell you even the name of the parties,
right.
who are posting videos going and voting by mail, or who are posting the videos of getting their ballots and voting with them. And I'm like, listen, I believe when they say, like, why did people vote Biden but not down ballot? I'm like, because they're not political people. They saw the celebrity on TV. The entertainment was shut down for a year. Nobody could go to the movies. And the people were screaming in their face, Trump is evil. And they're like, and so they just write Biden, send it in. And the Republicans were able to take a bunch of seats in Congress. Mm-hmm. Now, well, imagine what's going to happen without the threat of Trump and even the down ballot votes they did get. It's like, I think Republicans are going to do fairly well. They only need to win, what, like 11 seats? There's a long time between now and then, so I'm not going to make any predictions. I don't know. I just think based on current trajectory, that may be a fair assessment.
But don't you think that there's also a chance that the Democrats are going to completely overhaul the voting system?
Yes.
I mean, if you look in California, Gavin Newsom has his recall election coming up, but California just made it possible. I'm pretty sure that you can print your ballots
at home.
Yeah,
I saw that.
And then there's a lot of people can come and collect it for you and come and advise you on that. And they've done such an incredible job, the Democrats, of vilifying the different voting integrity laws that have sprung up in, what, like something like 28 states?
Yeah, a lot.
Like a whole bunch of states. And if you actually, you know, they say they're Jim Crow and they're exclusionary and discriminatory and all of this stuff. And if you actually look at those laws, if you take the time to read the laws, they don't say what the White House says they say. It's not about that. And if you read H.R. 1, like I did a deep dive into H.R. 1, it's 800-something pages of rules about voting that have absolutely nothing to do with anything other than preventing states from making their own laws.
So I looked up the it's called the Remote Accessible Vote by Mail.
Is this the California thing?
Yes. You can print your selections, sign the envelope, and then return the printed and signed selections either by mail or dropping it off in a voting location. The selections cannot be returned electronically. So the answer is yes. You can request to vote at home, print mm-hmm. out your, here's what it says. You download the application, mark your selections, print their selections, sign the envelope using the envelope provided with the vote by mail ballot or the voter's own envelope.
Cool.
That is not sketchy at all,
return,
you guys.
This is from sos.ca.gov. Oh, return the printed and signed selections either by mail or by dropping it off at a voting location. Well, there you go.
What?
You can now just print out your vote. This is, you know, Ian, this is the opposite of blockchain.
Yeah. This is where my nihilism is coming from. It is blatantly obvious that if you have a proprietary voting machine counting votes, it's not secure, and that we have an opportunity to attempt to secure it with a third blockchain. Like, you still do what we're doing plus a blockchain layer. But
literally zero security on the system.
So that's obvious.
Print out your ballot.
How has that not been adopted? That to me either shows that people are very stupid in general and we're just destined for extinction, or there are nefarious things stop keeping it from happening, which I think is more likely, which is terrifying. But how do you solve for that?
Humans crave to be told what to do. They don't want to think for themselves. You see, we're divergent. We are the weirdos who for some reason want to be responsible for ourselves. Everyone else just wants to be gently patted on the back as they rest in the lap of, you know, Daddy Biden.
I mean, is it because...
It's so terrifying to, like, listen to you say that.
Like, is it because people that are truly free are dangerous to society?
People who are truly free, I don't think they should be perceived as dangerous. Our country was founded on the idea of the individual having, you know, individual rights superseding group rights. And it's reversing course now. Now we're being told that we are idiots and cursed at, you know, by various YouTubers or whatever because we believe that individual rights supersede group rights. But obviously that's the only way to ensure that there's equality. Is to put the individual's rights first. You know, what is it, the whole thing about, like, you know, it's better that 100 guilty men go free than one innocent man be imprisoned. That's still true. That's still true.
You know what I love about that? Franklin took that quote from someone. I don't remember.
Blackstone.
Who. Blackstone said it's better that two guilty people.
Ten.
I think it was the original quote was two ten. To one. Are
There's
you
ten.
Sure? I think it was the original. It's like a Greek quote.
Blackstone's formulation.
Is that Greek?
No, it's from Blackstone. It's rooted in the story of Sodom and Gomorrah.
Well, the cool thing is that
makes a lot of sense.
If it is 10, I thought it was 2. But if it's 10, then he took a power of 10. He took a magnitude greater.
And then Ben Franklin.
We should do that again. It's better that 1,000 people go
that's
free.
Why
I agree with you.
That's why I oppose cash bail. I think cash bail is wrong.
Yeah, rich people buying their way out of jail.
Yeah.
So this is
indulgences.
This is a big issue in New York because crime went up because they ended cash bail, and this is a progressive issue. Like AOC is very much in favor of ending cash bail, and I completely agree with her. The idea that there's like some working class dude who gets arrested and accused of a crime, and then they say, now you're going to sit in jail for 2 months until your court date, you lose your job, you lose your apartment, your family doesn't know where you are, or things of that nature. It happens to people because you didn't have the $1,000 to pay bail, I think is wrong.
What we need is a much speedier court system. I mean, we have such
exactly.
a slow... There was a young man who actually died in prison because he couldn't afford bail, and it was over a stolen backpack, and he didn't do it. And I think he died in, like, Rikers or something like that.
You are innocent until proven guilty. The state should not have the ability to punish you in any way unless it's a violent crime with probable cause and the judge, you know, can actually
say...
What about recidivism?
Do you have a...
Well, in what capacity? What do you mean?
Like, if you're arrested multiple times for violations, for crimes, is there any point at which the state can hold you? Like,
yes.
There was somebody recently, I think it was, like, killed people. We've run a cover a lot of this stuff. I'm not remembering the story, but, like, someone was arrested a bunch of times on gun charges.
Well,
kept being released, kept being released, kept being released. And then, you know,
See, that's the problem. It's about the tyranny. If somebody is arrested on a violent crime and they say, here's the person, Your Honor, here's our probable cause as to why we believe, you know, this person did this. The judge will then say, like, due to the threat, you are remanded to custody.
Right.
That makes sense. If it's someone who is like a nonviolent offender, and this is what the progressives did, I'll tell you what they did wrong, though. When they say this guy was arrested for shoplifting and say, what's your probable cause? Well, what witnesses say he was shoplifting, that's not good enough. But we're going to hold him. No, cash bail is basically remand. OK, that's not fair to someone who's working class and can't afford it. The problem is you can't defend yourself.
Right.
You can't defend yourself. You're not secure in your person. So what happens is there was one guy who like he was shoplifting like 30 times.
Right.
And they kept arresting him and cutting him loose because the end of cash bail. And then he laughed when he was getting arrested. Some, I guess he said something like, I just keep doing it. You keep letting me go. It's like he was absolutely flouting the rules. He knew what he was doing.
Right.
See, there's limits. If someone does it multiple times and you're like, Your Honor, this is the third time this person's been arrested. We have numerous witness statements. Here are the statements. The judge can be like, okay, you're not getting out this time, dude.
I think we really need a much speedier trial system.
How do you do it when you got 13 million people in one city, you know? A court in every corner?
13 million? What's our
The greater metropolitan area of New York. The people who come into the city.
Well, the greater metropolitan area of New York, though, I mean, you don't have, like, all of those people aren't subject to the same courts.
No, if the people who come into and out of New York.
Oh, I see.
So you can live in Jersey and drive into New York for work and then get arrested and then you're in the system.
You end up in the tombs, whatever else.
Yep, end up in the tombs. What an awful name.
It is awful. Nice. I remember when a friend of mine was like, he was like, I just spent the whole weekend in the tombs.
This is what happens. Police officers know that.
Because they arrest you Friday. You can't get out till Monday.
Exactly. Yeah. And that could mean you lose your job.
Yep. So he didn't have one, so it was okay.
I have had friends who have been arrested wrongly on Fridays and then wait until Monday to get out.
Insane.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's not
And
good.
They lose their jobs. It's like you're two no-call, no-shows over the weekend.
Yeah, it's insane.
And during COVID, like, a lot of the courts were really backed up. A lot of things just didn't happen.
Maybe we need online courts.
I don't know about that.
There's that tendency that people won't the fight their own, the, sit at their own neighbors. So maybe
the
we
problem
need
with an
jurors
online court,
elsewhere.
Though, is it removes the. It's like we were talking about earlier with Twitter, right? It's like it removes the emotional aspect. So when you're a judge and you see a defendant in a orange jumpsuit on a closed circuit prison camera, are you really going to look at that guy and see his humanity?
Or with no eye contact?
Yeah, there's nothing. There's nothing at all.
So you think there'd be more guilty?
I think there'd be more guilty, yeah. I mean, I think that we should have a speedy court system where an accused is brought before a judge, brought before a jury. It shouldn't take, like, months and months and months. Some of these hearings take so long, like, just to get to the hearing.
Too many people. Yeah. One of the things that's it is relatively easier for certain crimes where it's like the cops themselves witness it. And they say, we are witnesses, but then they're still agents of the state, so it's very difficult. I don't like the idea that credibility is given to the agents of the state. You know, two people walk into a court. The cop says, this guy, stole a banana. And then the guy says, no, I didn't. The cop says, yes, he did. The court just believes the cop.
Right.
You know, oh, you arrested him, and the cop's probably telling the truth, and the jury just believes the cop.
There are, of course, instances where the police then plant the banana on the guy.
Well, but yes, but I think the most important thing is that cops can make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And so I know a lot of people on the left will be like, cops plant drugs. Oh, we've seen it. That body camera footage where the guy puts the drugs and it's under a rock or something. And then
I don't know what that is.
He accidentally turned his camera on when he thought he was turning it off. Yeah. But more importantly, there's this really famous video on YouTube where a lawyer talks about why you never talk to cops. And he explains that, like, the cop could mishear you and then tell the jury he confessed. And the jury is going to be like, okay.
Yeah, that's a rule that I grew up with, which is don't ever talk to cops about anything ever.
Anything ever.
If you're ever arrested, shut up.
Anything ever. Because you never know if you're the suspect. And people are like, oh, but if you're just a witness,
well,
you didn't do anything
what happens
wrong.
Too,
well,
like,
you don't know that.
That's a thing, too. Like, in terms of calling police officers for some reason, if there's something going on, you have to be really careful with that because cops show up and they don't know who is who.
Right.
And so immediately they assume, they can make these assumptions.
It's a difficult job.
Yeah, and we're losing cops constantly.
Well, you know how I feel about that. I'm not going to stand for the cops who are enforcing the lockdowns and mandates and arresting salon owners and letting Antifa go. So there was a woman in Minnesota. She opened her cafe, mm-hmm. in defiance of the lockdowns and said, you know, screw off. And the sheriffs went and they tracked her down and they arrested
her. Was this the bar owner? And she like had a couple of kids and she was trying to.
I don't know about the greater details in that.
Well, there might have been another one. Yeah, I don't have any respect for officers who are imposing and enforcing lockdowns either. Look what's going on in Australia. What happened to Australia?
Oh man,
got colonized by the British.
There was apparently some story about a lady who couldn't even cross over from like one state to the next.
Right,
like they've actually locked their states down or something.
They've locked down everything. That just seems insane to me.
They've been telling me that it's different areas too. It's very different from area to area.
Right.
Yeah,
but how do you stand for that? Like, how do you look at a police force and say, like, yes, I will stay in my home. One man who was 86 years old died, so 900,000 people have to get locked in their homes.
Yep.
It was literally one guy.
Very old.
Very old guy who, you know, probably died with COVID.
I think this was in Secaucus. I could be wrong. A woman she had a shop,
mm-hmm.
and they locked everything down. The government ordered all businesses to be closed. So she went on Facebook Live and started filming what she had in her store, saying, if anybody wants to buy anything, just comment below. So the cops showed up, knocked on the door, and they said, ma'am, you need to close your shop. And she said, what are you talking about? We are closed. And they're like, no, ma'am, you are trying to sell things online. You have to shut your shop down.
Why can't you sell things online? What about eBay? Only eBay is allowed to sell things online?
Whatever was going on
and Amazon
was not about COVID because the cops came and told her to stop live streaming on Facebook.
Yep.
That's insanity.
Where was that?
Secaucus, New Jersey.
I think that's where it was. I have to look it up.
Yeah.
It was somewhere.
That sounds
in,
like a
North
New Jersey thing to have happen. It? Yeah, it really does.
And I'm sure it's not the only place. We saw that they were letting people out of jail, and then they were putting that salon owner in Texas mm-hmm. in jail.
Yeah, and she was very forthright. She was like, "I have people who work for me, and I don't want them to lose their homes." I told my mom I was thinking about leaving New York. I was like, "I don't think I can make this work anymore, Mom." And she's like, just move to Jersey. I was like, no, Mom, that's the same place.
Even worse. Yeah.
It's actually worse.
It's literally the same place.
It's like stinky New York.
It's like,
yeah, true.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know about what people in cities should do. I can't predict the future. I do think it'll just start getting worse. I think.
Really?
Definitely.
Do you think, I mean, that's the interesting thing. It's like, where can you go? I was talking to Ben Shapiro about this because I was like, you know, what happens when people, you know, he was calling it like the big sort, you know, like there's going to be a big sort out. What happens? Like, will it eventually overtake the entire country? Is there anywhere that's going to be all right to live?
Probably like another internet
and just
will
like
spring
live
up.
Like did a free person. And that's the other thing too. It's like, is there going to be an Amazon for people who don't want to support Jeff Bezos's crazy empire?
I hope so.
Did you see the polling showing that, I think it's 37.2% of Americans want their region to separate from the U.S. to form its own regional union?
Really? Which regions won out? Does New England
win out? Yes. So, well, but they're all about a third. So
they'll be crazy there.
They broke up the country into five regions. You've got the Pacific region. You've got, I think, the Heartland region, the Mountain region, the Southern, and the Northeast. And most, the plurality, in terms of, I should phrase this better. Mm-hmm. On the West Coast, Pacific region, Democrats were the largest group that wanted to secede from the Union. In the South, it was Republicans.
Yeah.
In the Midwest, it's independent voters.
Okay.
But the overall average among all regions, when I actually went through the math, I went through the population of each state, normalized for population, 37.2% of people in this country are in favor of their area breaking off from the U.S. With the Great Sort, you are going to see those numbers dramatically increase.
Right.
Because the people in the Pacific region, the 30% of Republicans who are there and want to break off, will move to Texas and bolster the Republican number there and increase it. I think 60% of Southern Republicans wanted to break away.
I think that's like, I want to eat cake every day. Like, they don't really want, they don't know what it is they're saying they want. If you want a militarized, you want like a warlike five tribal North American, you know, 21st century, that's how you split it up. Then we'll all go to fight each other. That'd be crazy.
That would be pretty crazy, wouldn't it?
But it'd be nuclear weapons and tanks.
But we wouldn't all have nuclear weapons.
We finally
weapons,
can use
right?
our
like,
tanks somewhere.
Wouldn't it basically be like Hawaii would have nuclear weapons?
We wouldn't all have nuclear weapons.
Minnesota, right. I think Minnesota would have nuclear weapons.
And the port cities would be
right?
devastated.
How many people understand the policies they're voting for?
Most of them seem not to.
And so when people say,
I don't even
what
think
I want,
the politicians read the bills sometimes.
You're right, they don't. What was it? What was the omnibus Senate, was the wheeled in on a wagon that with 5,000 pages and nobody read it?
The Senate just voted for that. But yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah, the Senate just the Senate was asked recently, wasn't it, to vote for the massive, giant, stupid infrastructure bill before it was written, because the House like refused to take it up unless the Senate promised that they would pass something that the House drafted.
Oh, come on.
So there was collusion of the
Ian, that's here's what'll happen.
Insanity, and like basically nobody read it because it doesn't exist.
There will be voting a certain amount of signatures to get something as a referendum. It'll appear on the ballot in November, and then people will see it, and as we already know, X amount of people in these regions want to secede. So when they're voting, it'll be like, would you like your region to become its own region? They go, oh yeah, for sure. And they vote for it. They don't care about the consequences.
Thing,
they don't
know. The other thing, too, is the way that the laws are named. They're named in very obfuscatory ways so that you don't really know what you're voting for.
Right.
Yeah. Right? The Patriot Act is the opposite of the Patriot Act. Or like H.R. 1, they call it like a For the People Act. Mm. It's not at all. It's actually like so overreaching and authoritarian and insane.
16-year-olds voting.
Yes, that's what it has in it. It has like a provision that you have to register people who are under 18 to vote.
Amazing.
That's in it.
Let's go to Super Chats. If you haven't already, smash that like button. Go to TimCast.com, become a member, and you will get a bonus segment coming up later tonight. But for now, smash that like button, and we will read these Super Chats. All right, let's see. The crazy one says, should Elon take the Olympic flame to space? Huh. I don't know why.
Yes.
Who cares?
All right. Crichton42 says, the governor of Washington State mandated all state employees and healthcare workers get vaccinated by October 18th or lose their jobs. I now have a decision to make, get vaccinated or lose my job. Well, I've been telling people, you know, I'm in favor of companies, private companies, to a certain degree, mandating their employees get vaccinated. So I think first, scale matters. If it's a company with like 100,000 employees, probably not so much. There's a lot of wide-ranging implications about international law, interstate law, health rights. But small businesses, definitely.
They're not even allowed to ask, are they?
Yeah, they are.
What's your medical history when you apply for a job?
You're allowed to do that, yes. Companies are allowed to mandate vaccines, but they assume responsibility for any adverse events if they require some medical intervention. But here's the point. First of all, when it comes to small business, I don't think the employer or the employee, they owe each other anything. We have an agreement.
Right.
I'm looking for someone to do work. Do you want to do work? Here's my stipulations. No, have a nice day. I don't owe you any money. So when small businesses are like, here are my restrictions, I'm like, okay, well, you know, like, I'm not going to tell a small business they have to hire somebody within certain reasons. This is a big moral challenge because I understand there are certain things where I'm like, you shouldn't discriminate on the basis of race or identity. And then, you know, when it comes to vaccines, it's like, well, like, now you're telling people they can discriminate for a certain reason. But ultimately, you know what ends up happening? The people are now making the hard choice of putting their money where their mouth is. No longer will you be able to sit back and just let everyone else fight your battles for you.
That's interesting.
Unfortunately.
And we've all gotten those emails of like, hey, I really support you, but I'm never going to speak publicly.
I know. I get them. I get
too
many.
And I probably am not going to talk to you.
And the problem is, when I was saying a long time ago, if these people are doing these things, you need to speak up now or forever hold your peace. When it was just critical race applied principles, people were like, nah, I don't got to say anything. Well, now they're telling you to get an injection. Whether your doctor tells you or not, they have requirements. Now that's between you and your doctor. You go talk to your doctor about what's right for you. But now you have a hard line. Will you comply with medication or not? It was easier when it was CRT. Now, who will cross the line? I got to be honest. I think most people will.
You think most people will cross the line?
Definitely. I think there'll be an exodus. I think it will hurt the economy. But I think most people are going to fall back on, I will not stand up.
Right.
Yeah. I think you'll see more and more people be pushed out. And
I think a lot of people don't want to stand up. I think a lot of people just want to be left alone. But they're also not willing to fight for that.
So what happens now when they are given this? I mean, look, like I said, with CRT, people are like, I know it's bad, but I can ignore this because it's a long-term problem. Your kids will inherit a trash future. Okay, I get it.
I think it's hard to ignore the critical race theory stuff. You know, when your kid comes home saying like, Mom, are we racist because we're white people? Like,
no, that's but rough. Look, there are certain problems you see with industry like pollution where you're like, we know it's bad, but whatever. And then people keep buying their, you know, products and stuff. Then there's the more immediate where it's like CRT and critical race applied principles in work and school. And then you're like, okay, this is getting harder to ignore, but what's the worst case? And I keep my head down, I'll be okay. Now they're like, sir, we would like you to get a medical procedure. I know, a small one, but still. Now people are going to have to make that choice.
Right.
Is this the line for them? I think for a lot of people it will be. I think for most people it won't be.
There's got to be a line somewhere, though. I mean, we've given up so much. We give up constantly. This is the biggest thing that I've heard from people who are, you know, who like filling my Twitter with hate is like, but you've given up this already. You have these other restrictions that we've gone along with. Why is this so different? You know, that's a nice way of saying it. But
well, it's one step at a time. People accept it.
Yeah, and we clearly shouldn't be constantly capitulating rights after rights. It's just not acceptable. We clearly should have been standing up for this against this kind of thing a long time ago, and we haven't been.
It's the exploitation of goodwill. We thought 15 days to slow the spread was reasonable, mm-hmm. and then it became 500. What are we on? 500 and
70. It's a lot.
No, it's like 512 or something. 515 maybe.
It's a lot of days, and it's not working. I mean, that's the thing too. It's like this: they constantly, as they enforce these things and throw these things at us. There's this underlying understanding that it's actually helping, that it's actually reducing the virus, that it's actually doing all these. None of that is actually true. We're going to be living with this virus for the rest of our lives, for the rest of human history, probably, or whatever.
Yeah, it's got animal repositories.
It's not going away. So we have to figure out how to exist in this reality. We can't just imagine that we're going to completely eradicate it if we just all stay in our houses and stop breathing.
Yeah. All right, let's read some more. Ian Kinney says, hey, Tim, did you see the hit piece segment Cenk Uygur did on you? Lauren Chen made a video about it. No, I don't watch any of those things. It's a waste of time. That's one thing, you know, there's a video made about me every other day. Why should I care if the Young Turks have opinions? They're not relevant. I look at what's going on with the world, and I just think drama. Oh, Tim Pool did this, that. I don't care. Who cares about me? I guess they do.
You
whatever.
Know what's up with you.
I don't care about me. I care about other stuff. You know what I mean? It's the weirdest thing.
Yeah, that's how I feel about politics sometimes. It's like, dude, this human drama that we created that we're like spinning in this reality. Like,
but I care about politics.
I kind of do.
Like when AOC comes out and lies about what happened in the Capitol, mm-hmm. her whole story is fabricated, by the way, because the time at which the cop came to her door and knocked was a few minutes before the first Trump supporters actually breached the barricades.
Really?
Yes. And
I missed that part.
Every conservative has. Every critic of AOC has missed this. And no matter how many times I said, I DM'd Ben Shapiro. I was like, we were talking. And then he was like, oh, that's actually a good point.
So the cop knocked on her door before they breached the Capitol.
Yes.
To check
and
see.
An hour before they breached the Capitol.
Oh, come on.
No one knew. So AOC comes out and makes this whole thing up.
So what was he doing at her door? What was he doing at her door?
There was a bomb scare.
So totally separately. Oh, yeah. The bomb. That's
maybe
right.
She hid in the bathroom because someone knocked on her door. That may be true. But for her to conflate that with, I thought they made it to my office when it was an hour before anyone.
No timeline to support that.
There is. The New York Times did the whole timeline.
No, to support.
Oh,
her
right.
Claim.
Hers. The New York Times did a whole timeline of it. Mm-hmm. And Reuters did a timeline of what she claimed. And for some reason, no one put these pieces together. I feel like I'm the only one who's done multiple segments about it. Like, I don't understand why all the conservatives keep coming out and saying she wasn't even in the building. She never said she was in the building. She never said she was in the Capitol. So I'm like, how come when I first reported on this, the Huffington Post a reporter hit me up saying, you're wrong, your timeline's wrong. And then I was like, oh, man. So I deleted the tweet. I was like, I must have screwed up. Then I went to the timeline again and I was like,
another look.
So then I messaged him back and I said, here's the evidence. And he went, oh, I guess I made a mistake. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's right. AOC said it was around 1 p.m. when the cop knocked on her door. That was because there was a bomb reported and he was coming. They were given notice. They all had to leave. AOC chose not to for some reason. So the cop had to go get her. For her to then claim she thought the protesters got to her room,
right.
The conservatives all respond, but her office wasn't even in the Capitol building.
But it turns
and then
out
the fact check is Reuters says false. AOC never claimed she was. She was concerned that they made it through the tunnels. And then I looked at the timeline. I'm like, it was an hour and 11 minutes after the cop showed up at her door that the first doors got breached at the Capitol building. An hour and 11 minutes. No one thought these people were getting in the building. If they did, there would have been more police at the Capitol. And if you think that's not true, then you got a problem with the Capitol police because they should. If you think the Capitol police knew that was going to happen and AOC had knew it was going to happen, why didn't they call for more police? She lied.
What did you think of that hearing, that first day of the hearing? Nancy Pelosi's.
It's ridiculous.
It was such trash.
Yeah.
It was such theater. It was insane.
Anyway, well, to wrap up that super chat.
Sorry.
I think it's funny when people are obsessed with non-political actors to such an extreme degree. Like, I've criticized Jen Kuger of the Young Turks. He's got a prominent show. It's feel free to criticize me. I've got a prominent show. I'm mostly more interested in criticizing politicians and, you know, people with more power. Look, the people who are actually, you know, changing things. But to be fair, the concern from the left is that the show is very influential, so by all means criticize it. The problem I have is that they don't have real criticism. There's a very serious challenge among the left to try and figure out what's wrong with what it is that I do. So I don't want to waste time, you know, dealing with watching their stupid garbage where they make stuff up. What are they going to say? Well, Tim Pool talks about universal health care and agreeing with it, but then he makes fun of Democrats. It's like, so does a bunch of leftists.
And they think you're fear baiting. That's the main concern. Because if you are projecting in the future and like, I think it's going to get worse. It's not that you're saying it's going to get worse, but you're just projecting one possible future that happens to be terrifying.
Vosh said I was far right.
They're pissed at you because you're not upholding any specific narrative.
I'm telling you, that's what it is.
Like, yeah, you're not upholding one narrative or another. You're just actually, you know, doing what you think is right. And they're nobody really quite understands a person that does that anymore.
They really want to call me far right, but I'm literally not. I'm like, I agree with AOC on ending cash bail. Cash bail's bad. Like, well, you're lying. It's like, I don't know, dude. Make all the hit pieces in the world you want. We got a lot of fun stuff happening here. It was funny when Vosh came and we were talking with him before he came up. We were like, we're doing a bunch of new shows. Dungeons and Dragons.
He'd love the
Paranormals and Mysteries. And I think it's funny that, like, the company so far has, like, a political show. And then, like, we're launching totally not political stuff. And they're acting like it's the apocalypse. Probably because they realize...
Well, that's what's needed. We need culture. We need more culture than just the leftist-driven propaganda that we're seeing come out of Hollywood. And
Yep.
Dude, the songs. Oh, I want to talk about it. The songs that we were working on the other night. Dude, they're so good.
You guys
it's vocal songs? Harmonies. Yeah, that's where it's at.
Well, I got a bunch of songs. Ian was singing.
We got they're so good. It's just raw recordings, so I'm not going to play it live.
All right, well,
I have some of that from the musical I wrote about Condoleezza Rice one time.
We got to read some more Super Chats. Rant over. David James says, Ian's shirt is the best.
That's what I'm saying.
It's true.
All right.
Yes.
All right, let's see.
Computer. Solve this.
Southern Survival says, I'm a 15-year veteran currently on my fourth tour, and I'm worried about my career being affected by my refusal of the vaccine. The DOD is going to mandate it soon. I just want the liberty I swore to defend. Well, as I always say, get a good doctor. You know, if you don't trust your doctor, you need to get a good one. But my understanding about people in the Army is, don't you get a ton of vaccines the moment you join? Isn't that true?
I have no idea.
The stories I heard from people is that, like, when you enlist, you go to basic training, they give you a bunch of, like, vaccines.
I mean, prepare to be toxified if you're going into the military. They'll put you right next to burn pits, and you'll breathe that smoke 24 hours a day.
They put you in a room with tear gas.
Yeah. They have burn pits in, I think it's Afghanistan, where they just, all the trash is thrown in as just a 24/7 burn pit. And then when the wind catches it, brings it over the base, everyone has to breathe that.
All right. Super Neil Comics says, I am from Canada and so much want to live in one of the red states like Texas and become a U.S. citizen.
Nice.
I love you guys. See, everybody wants to come to America.
Everyone wants to move to Texas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, what does it say? Waffle. I can't read. Wolf Doffle God. Okay. As someone who lives in Louisville, the way she pronounced it makes me want to smash my face into a table.
I'm so
love
sorry.
The work y'all do. Louisville. I was like, where's that?
Louisville, huh?
I've never been to Kentucky. So.
Wow, look at this. SEI Power says, even North Dakota is being overrun by California and Colorado.
Jeez.
Yeah. Almighty Media says, Tim, you should have politicians on. Ted Cruz. Yes, we would have Ted Cruz on. Ted
Absolutely.
Cruz, come on the show. That'd be amazing. Like, you know, look, here's something, some insight. Like, when we first started the show, we would send emails to people and they would just click delete. They don't care. They don't want to come on the show. And then a few months go by and then people would be like, oh, you know, maybe sometime. And as the show's gotten bigger and more subscribers, all of a sudden now we're getting people emailing us being like, yeah, can we come on your show? So I'm not in the mindset of like reaching out to Ted Cruz and asking him to come on the show. But if Ted Cruz wants to come on the show, we'd be like, yeah, absolutely. That'd be fantastic. Granted, I will say politicians are the worst bookings ever.
Why?
They always go
so bad.
I have politicians following me, and I'll DM them, be like, would you want to come on the show? Absolutely. Email this person. They can handle it. And then you do, and then they don't respond.
And then it just dies.
That's right. So it's a waste of time.
Yeah. I talked to Ted Cruz last week, and it took like a whole bunch of like running around like a crazy person to get like, what, 3 minutes or something.
So much.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to get 2.5 hours out of these, you know, politicians. All right. Aaron Salmon says, saw you talking about Spiffy's. I live about 20 minutes from there. It was an icon of the I-5 corridor. They had a dine-in to protest restrictions. People from Idaho and Cali showed up. There wasn't even standing room to eat. Sad to see them go. Bummer, man. Wow. Capitalism, Entertainment, and Technologies says, calling it now. Tim just heard Country Roads and moved. Also, most of Texas left tends to be libertarian druggy types at the moment. I'm totally cool with those people. That's legit. That's like Ian, basically.
Yeah, as my homies. All in moderation.
Mm-hmm. Even moderation.
Yeah. Well, yeah, good point.
Dallacourt says, Tim, with all the blue ties rolling into Texas, do you think it'll dilute the liberal influence in the coastal states, allowing for some red wins? No. Because red voters and non-Democrat voters are leaving as well. So you've got conservatives fleeing New York, and you've got conservatives fleeing California, and still. The problem is the authoritarian lockdowns hurt everybody, Democrats and Republicans, so everybody wants to leave. The problem is the Democrats bring those same policies with them, not caring or realizing. So I do think it could theoretically dilute some of their power and expand congressional seats for conservatives, because many of these Democrat voters who leave big cities to the suburbs, at the least, are spreading out their vote into red dominated areas. It could flip some red areas blue that are really close. But I think if you got an area that's like 55% Republican, 45%, Democrat, and then some Democrats move out to that suburb, it won't be enough to change.
So you don't think any of these Democrats are going to change their minds?
Definitely not.
You don't think so?
No, I changed my mind.
A lot of people changed their minds.
I did. I mean, I've never really party politics.
And it is true that a lot of Democrats bought guns.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps.
I looked into trying to buy a gun in New York City.
Oh, good lord. What was that like?
There were like interviews required. You know, they wanted blood samples.
Yeah.
All right. I was wrong about that. People will change their minds. We got this tweet. Christopher Brown says, I was far left when I found you in 2018, and you have helped me find my way back to the center. A few weeks ago, you had on the guys from Fresh and Fit, and they helped me a lot with my depression. If I never found you, I'd be dead right now. Tim, you saved my life. Hey, man. I really appreciate that and the super chat. And you know what's crazy is, I think going back to those smear pieces, they're like, there was one, apparently I'm the most dangerous political commentator, I guess, because the reason is I'm a moderate, and that's really, really bad for the far left.
It's bad because for the profits.
It creates a real alternative. If you grow up and you're left liberal and this is the tribe and it's the only space you have where you feel safe, and then someone says, well, you can always be a suit-wearing Christian conservative, they go, that's not me. I won't fit in. I don't believe those things. And then you see rock music, skateboarding, moderates, and that's like, that makes more sense for me. It's creating apostates for the left.
It does make more sense.
For a lot of people. I mean, it's like, you look at a lot of the podcasts that are prominent conservative and they're wearing suits. And they're very stodgy and, you know, very businesslike. And, you know, Ian's basically wearing his pajamas.
Every day. Yeah. I bought more pajama pants. I have at least seven pairs now.
And look at the shows we're making. D&D and skate, fun, and, you know, skating and the you know, the vlog and the mystery stuff.
Dude, the tie is an upside down noose. Why do people wear those? Crazy. Someone could just grab it.
All right.
I wonder what the origin of that is.
What the heck? It's like subservience or something weird.
It's
probably like law.
Quicks says,
courts kind of thing.
Service guarantee citizenship. Perhaps the way to accomplish this would be to limit the ability for people to vote. They must show gainful employment. Unable to work, there should be other service options available. Support the system to earn a vote. I really do like the idea of service guaranteeing citizenship. It doesn't mean military, and it doesn't mean labor. It just means contribute to the community in some discernible way, and you vote.
What if that's like by getting the vaccine? Contribute to the community by getting your inoculation.
We would have to set parameters as to what that means.
I know.
It would be like community service. So community service at your own discretion is literally like going to a community center and be like, you need any help? And then they sign it for you. And so my high school had that. The high school that I went to and never finished, because I only went there for like 2 months, they make you do community service before you graduate. At least I'm pretty sure that was the case. I didn't know because I never did it because I left and didn't graduate. So
I had to do community service for my confirmation hours, but also for my high school.
Oh, see, there you go.
Yeah.
What did you do?
For my confirmation hours, I worked in a like soup kitchen.
For like religious confirmation?
Yeah. I'm Catholic.
Oh, this is really important. Tiny, Tiny Timmy Y'all? Is that how I'm pronouncing it? Tim, given your stance on 2A, would you disarm me, a card-carrying CCL holder, if I were to visit the Cast Castle for one of your public events?
Oh.
No.
Good question. Yeah.
The answer is no.
No way.
The answer is we're going to have security and we're going to vet the people who come, and the events aren't going to be that big anyway. And my attitude is right to keep and bear arms. If somebody wanted to come here and hurt me, there's crazy ways you can hurt me or anybody else. So I'm actually not worried. And if someone lets me know that they're armed, that's fantastic. Thank you for letting me know. That's great. I look forward to you defending us in the event that someone does something crazy. People drive cars all the time. They're not running people over. People come here all the time for deliveries and for whatever. They're not running anybody over. They have cars. They have the means to cause harm. They don't do it. I don't view a gun any differently. I don't see like, oh, that guy's got a gun. He's going to attack somebody. I'm like, well, I don't know. Whatever. I got a gun too. So don't draw it, you know, unless there's a life, you know, I don't think there'll be any reason to. Oh, this is important. Martin Edgar says 23-suite, 50-room, 26,000-square-foot lodge in northern Michigan for sale for a mere $19.5 million on 415 acres with 13 other buildings on the property. Sits on Lake Superior. New vertical launch site being to be built near, beginning to be built nearby. Search for Grano Loma. All right, so let's just get 20 million people to put in $1, a dollar each, or each and every one of our subscribers to put in $20.
Oh yeah,
and then we'll procure this here large massive property and we'll start a city.
Let's do it.
Not really, but that would be fun, wouldn't
it'd
it?
It'd be so fun.
I was looking at Martha's Vineyard properties.
Mm-hmm. That's wow. Super expensive. Why? My goodness.
They're actually not the most expensive I've seen.
What's the most expensive?
I mean, like, you look at parts of California and Silicon Valley, and it's like million, 40 yeah, million. Martha's ludicrous. Vineyard had stuff that was like 12 million, but there's a lot of places that are like a million.
I like Nantucket better, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. But then you're like, where do you get your food from? You're like on an island, you know?
Yeah, but so is Martha's Vineyard.
No, I know, but like one of them.
I mean, I'm not moving either of those places, but right. Still.
That's the craziest thing about it. I can understand getting a mountain fortress in New Zealand, mm-hmm. but I can't understand getting a multi-million. Well, no, I take that back. If you're worth $1 billion, you're going to be like, I don't know, whatever. It's like, it's not a big deal to buy a multi-million dollar property.
New Zealand, though. New Zealand is bad because Jacinda Ardern is insane.
Yeah, but if you're one of these billionaires, the rules don't apply to you.
You can do whatever you want. Yeah. Well, as we saw this weekend, right? Because if the rules don't apply to Obama or Erykah Badu.
They definitely don't. All right, let's see. Uncle Sam says, earlier segment you said people were crazy who questioned history being right. I don't know. I'm not sure I understand. I propose looking at dictionaries and the changing definitions yearly, then think of first edition books, anything after a change, correct? What are those changes? I talked about something with the third, you know, Biden is being accused of violating the Third Amendment.
No, what was this?
So with the eviction moratorium, mm-hmm. there's a group of lawyers who are saying certainly many of the people who are renting properties are soldiers. And if the government is mandating you can't evict a soldier, that is a violation of the Third Amendment.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes. And so their argument is the whole thing should be thrown out because there was no consideration given to the idea of how they restrict soldiers. Therefore, the whole thing is bad. But at the very least, the court should say if you're an active duty soldier or if you are a soldier of the U.S. you know, armed forces in any way, you can be evicted, which kind of sucks because of all the people who would be evicted.
Right.
I don't want them to be evicted.
But still.
However, the interesting thing is the agents of the king who were enforcing a lot of his edicts were the soldiers.
Right.
So when the founding fathers were like, soldiers shouldn't be able to go in your house.
But that's the Quartering Act, that one?
No, Third Amendment?
Yeah.
Right. There was two Quartering Acts. One was in 1774, I believe. And that was like what really set everybody off.
Right, yeah.
The real issue, I think, was not that soldiers were occupying homes, but that mm-hmm. agents of the state were stealing property from the people.
Right.
So what the Third Amendment should actually say is agents of the government shall not be able to claim, seize, or take property from an American citizen without due process. Civil asset forfeiture, out the window, Third mm-hmm. Amendment. But the Third Amendment says no soldiers, you know, during peacetime shall, you know, be quartered in someone's home or during war without an act of Congress or whatever, about an act of legislation or something. So the perspective was, in 1774, I think it was, the soldiers would go in your house, take your food, sleep on your bed.
Right.
And they were like, get out of here. This is
yeah,
this is
they
BS.
Didn't like that.
Right now, we have cops will actually go in your house and use it for stakeouts and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
They'll seize property from your vehicle. I think all of that should fall under the Third Amendment. I think the issue is the language changes and the understanding of what the issue was changes. But the core element of what the Third Amendment, I think, represents is being secure in your property from the government just taking whatever they want.
People never talk about the Third Amendment.
The Fourth Amendment says, you know, search and seizure.
Right.
So I guess that's why they're like, oh, well, that covers it. But then what? Agents of the state can just go in your house?
Yeah, that shouldn't be
for different
allowed.
Reasons?
For whatever reason they want.
I mean, again, the Fourth Amendment does cover a lot of this. But the Third Amendment is a broad protection of your property, I think should be considered and argued. All right, let's see. Admar says, my wife and I are required for jabs at our jobs. Have a three-month-old and standing up for his future liberty, not mine. Would rather risk a job than risk freedom. For what it's worth, both have doctorates. Wow.
Wow.
So that's the PhD
That's
people.
Right. That's the PhDs. All right, let's see. Mr. Obvious says, YouTube took down my video, which was 100% sourced by the CDC. YouTube is also calling the CDC fake news. The censorship is out of control. And that happened to Steven Crowder. Mm-hmm. The one thing you should have to say always is talk to your doctor.
Right.
The main reason I say that isn't just because I'm worried about YouTube censorship. YouTube does say, like, that's one of the things you have to say. But I genuinely think show any of these stories you're concerned about to a doctor, because they're going to know so much more than any of us when it comes to, like, certain counterindications.
Right.
Well,
underlying
so.
Conditions.
I mean, you hope that they will.
Yeah.
Well, no, look.
Depends
look.
On the doctor.
Here, yeah.
Depends but, on what sure. they have a doctor
I mean, I was
in.
Asking pediatrician about vaccinations, and kind of a dodgy answer.
You got a bad doctor. If you called a plumber mm-hmm. and you said that my toilet's backed up, and he went, oh, your Bobo line must be burfed, you'd be like, I don't think you know what you're talking about. I'm going to call a different right. plumber. I don't understand why people have that like if your doctor can't give you legitimate answers, like you need to find one. That
yeah, I mean, what I'd like
to
know
questions.
Is I'm interested to know what the risks are. You know, they're talking about emergency authorization for vaccinations for children under 12. And I'm saying, like, is there a way to know what the risks are? Is there a way to, like, are there additional tests that you could run on kids to make sure that they're not susceptible to some of these adverse reactions, you know? And the answer was no. And I was like, really?
That's the problem with rushing vaccines
that's
out.
That doesn't seem like
I
the
think,
thing.
I think it's an issue of people taking their doctors, their health for granted and mm-hmm. just assuming that because you've hired someone, they're good at their job.
That's for sure, dude. The human body is, this has been on my mind a lot too, the greatest gift God has ever given us. And to abuse it is blasphemous and is demonic. It's a form of possession to abuse your body, whether that's obesity or haphazardly injecting yourself with God knows what. Take it seriously.
I'm literally not worried about the vaccines. You're vaccinated. I think the issue is people need to do better when they're choosing their doctors. The doctor my family had was a family friend. They knew him. They trusted him. He answered all the questions, helped calm people down. I think the issue is probably a lot of people have bad doctors.
And they're not virologists. You get a doctorate in virology. You get a doctorate in brain in neurochemistry. You get a doctorate in philosophy. You're still a doctor.
Well,
doesn't mean you know anything about
Ian,
vaccines.
That has nothing to do with what I'm talking about.
Well, you're saying, like Olivia was saying, she went to a pediatrician and asked about viruses. The pediatrician's not educated in viruses. It's not a virologist. So you need to go to the right doctors, the people that actually know the stuff. And good luck finding them, I guess.
You need to go to healthcare practitioners who are knowledgeable, who have been reading the modern literature and the science, and are going to give you a legitimate, honest opinion based on everything that's going on, not a political opinion. Let's read some more. EW says, Libby, you should look at Tulsa, Oklahoma for the post-millennial. Tulsa is a mid-major city, cheap cost of living, good people, great culture, like a mini Austin, and on the best kept, one of the best kept secrets in the red states. Come down, I'll happily host.
What city was it?
Tulsa.
Tulsa,
yeah.
Oklahoma.
Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Nebraska is pretty good, isn't it?
I think so.
I remember for a while all the good bands were coming out of Omaha, Nebraska. Wasn't like Sleater-Kinney from Omaha, Nebraska?
Wow.
She's great.
Yeah.
Florida man says, YouTube just gave me a strike for uploading Rand's video. What? Medical misinformation, they claim. I'm over the tyranny. We the people need to clean up D.C. I mean, that's SF, actually, but, you know. But I hear what you're saying. I don't know, man. This is the craziest thing because I don't understand how YouTube enforces its rules. I genuinely think it's, like, purposefully vague and confusing. I have no idea. All I know is I do not want to assume any liability for someone doing anything dumb, so talk to your doctor about what's right for you.
Yep.
Strikes are something else. Like, you can get struck and banned or whatever, and we have other means. We have the podcast. We got, you know, the website. But I don't give financial advice. I don't give medical advice. Mm-hmm. You got to go to a financial planner and a doctor. So leave me out of that stuff. Alex on Earth says, was Loki right in his speech about kneeling being the natural state of human? You know, when Ian was saying that, I did want to do the Loki line. He's like, you know, is this not better? Your natural state? Humans crave subjugation. I think he's over the top. But I think what you see is that most people are willing to accept kneeling before a tyrant if it means they'll just get to go to their house, close the door, and eat, you know, a Hot Pocket or something.
To the point where we have Social Security cards now at birth. They don't even ask us if we want them. We just... Mm-hmm.
You just are registered.
Are we born kneeling?
Wait, you know? Chickens and a chicken coop. A Social Security card at birth?
Yeah, you're assigned a number at birth.
But you have to apply for a Social Security card.
Oh, not the card, the number. You get a number at birth. But they didn't used to, like, until like the 30s or something.
But you have to like apply for it. Like,
I think you just, don't you just get a number on your
You apply your kid for it?
Yeah, I had to like go get it.
And what if you don't do that?
I don't know.
Your kid doesn't exist.
Reminds me of Rick and Morty when he's playing Roy. And they're like, this guy's taking him off the grid. He doesn't have a Social Security number. That was funny. All right.
But you know what's weird about Social Security numbers? I lost my Social Security card at one point. I had to get a new one. And I went to the Social Security office to get it. And they had someone who was not my mother listed as my mother. And they were like asking me the emergency questions like, oh, and who's your mother? And I said, and they were like, that's not your mother. And I was like, she's standing right here. Like, she drove me down here.
All right. Let's see.
Pretty weird.
Laura Wren says, it's my birthday, and for my birthday, I was refused entry into my girl's ICU because of the new restrictions. July 30th, she was crushed by a semi, 4 hours away in another state. We have a GoFundMe. Help Carol Ann recover. Not everything is covered by insurance. I'm so sorry to hear that, and I'm sorry to hear about the whole situation. Best of luck. That's GoFundMe, Carol Ann recover. All right, let's see what we got here. We'll do a couple more here. Richard Cranium says, with almost 30,000 people watching, let's hit that like button. Woo. That's right. Definitely. All right. Let's see. Black Rock Beacon says, to all serving in the armed forces, look up DOD Directive 6200.2, use of investigational new drugs for force health protection. We need to start doing FOIA requests to ensure all protocols were properly followed. Otherwise, vax is an unlawful order. And I'll stress to people, the DOJ has... I think the Supreme Court's ruled on this. They can mandate vaccines nationwide if they wanted to.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really? What?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, yeah.
What?
I think it was Harmeet Dhillon who also did a thread saying, like, she has to let people understand that, like, jobs are allowed to mandate that from you. Yeah. Okay, we'll just do a couple more. William J. says, Libby looks like Elizabeth Moss from the show Handmaid's Tale.
Dude,
great show. Very relevant to what's going on today. You what?
People say that to me.
That's funny.
All right, let's see what we got. Zane Peavy says, if you're okay with companies mandating employees get the vaccine, would you be okay with them forcing women to take birth control? I guess the answer is yes. If a company says, I'm talking about small businesses, mind you, like larger corporations with heavier regulation and thousands of employees are different. I'm saying like a small business. If there's a guy who makes pizzas and it's literally just him in his kitchen and he has to hire somebody and he's like, I don't want somebody who's coming in here and doing, you know, X, Y, or Z. Then it's his choice, you know, within reason. So I don't know. It's a tough question. I got to be honest. Maybe the answer to that one is no. And maybe it's not so much an issue of principle. It's an issue of personal morals. And that's an important distinction as well. I might say something like, I don't think businesses should be forced, but I also have an issue with this kind of violation of ethics. And then it becomes a really, this is why I'm never going to be a politician. Mm-hmm. This is why I don't want to be legislating law or writing up what should or shouldn't be, because someone's going to say it's not fair if I have to do X if this person doesn't have to do Y. And then I'm just like, bro, I am not going to be a king of anybody.
I think human traffickers force girls to go on birth control before they escort them across the border because of the...
Yikes, man.
This is what Ted Cruz was telling me the other day. It was at this conference in Houston. But he was saying that... the human traffickers force girls to be on birth control because they are going to get raped on the journey.
That's messed up.
It's messed up?
Yeah.
Yeah, I talked to this other guy who was showing me the bracelets that the human traffickers put on people when they're crossing the border. It'll be like, you know, it'll say like mujer on them and stuff, just like identifying who everybody is as to where they're going to be like sold off to and stuff.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's really a mess. It's the people who are profiting from that are clearly the... massive international human trafficking cartels.
Well, my friends, thanks for hanging out. We're going to go start doing the members-only segment. So go to timcast.com, become a member, and we'll have the bonus segment coming up shortly. You can also subscribe to this channel, hit the like button, leave us a good review, and follow us at TimcastIRL, and you can TimcastIRL, and you can follow me personally at Timcast. Do you want to shout anything out, Libby?
Oh, yeah. I'm Libby Emmons. I'm at the Post Millennial every day, and I'm at Libby Emmons on Twitter. Thanks.
Thanks for coming, Libby.
Thanks.
Yeah, follow me at Ian Crossland, guys. Thanks for coming.
Thank you so much for coming, Libby. And I just wanted to say, too, that part of what we're doing with the culture is giving some kind of alternative, because I have noticed that one thing conservatives like to do is say this is bad, 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 bad. So what are you offering as a...
What am I offering?
Alternative. No, not an you. Alternative. Like, it's like oh. TimCast.com or whatever.
I'm glad you guys are.
Answer that question.
Yeah, answer it, Libby.
I'm writing a book, actually, on how to make a conservative arts and culture movement.
That's awesome. Cool. Perfect.
Yeah.
You know exactly what's up.
Go to TimCast.com. And we'll try, we always try to get this segment up by about 11 or so. So we will see you all then.
Bye, guys.